It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham's here. Jeff Jarvis is here. We're going to get into some raging debates coming up on privacy, on sexism, on yodeling pickles. It's all next. Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 412, recorded Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. The Yodeling Pickle. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest news from the Googleverse, from the Facebookverse, the Twitterverse, from new media, old media. Really, it's a wide-ranging conversation on a variety of topics with some of the smartest people I know, starting with Stacey Higginbotham. You remember her from GigaOhm. She now is doing her own thing at StaceyOnIoT.com. And subscribe to the newsletter there. And she has a podcast with Kevin Toefel, IoTPodcast.com. Giga Stacey, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Stacey!
Hello. I cleaned up my study, you see? No boxes.
Are you going to ever hang anything on the wall there?
Oh, see, we're not going to stop shaming you.
It looks like you just moved in.
Look, see, there's stuff. Oh, I can't. This is the wrong camera.
Yeah, see, there's more stuff in the other place. But your back, there's your whiteboard, which is very clean.
I like whiteboard, yeah.
A clean whiteboard is a clean mind.
Did we shame you into taking the boxes away?
Oh, no. I cleaned up. We had a party yesterday. So.
Oh, fun. The 4th of July event. Did you do a barbecue? You are in Austin, Texas.
No barbecue. Although I made excellent ribs. I can share the recipe with you guys.
Oh, I would love it.
Oh, I bet.
Stacey's an amazing resource in so many ways. Stacey on IoT and the Internet of Things podcast. Also here, Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. He's also a book author, written many books, including What Would Google Do? Geek Sparing Gifts about reinventing the news industry. He blogs at buzzmachine.com. And he's at Jeff Jarvis on Twitter. Hello.
Hello.
I have to share a little personal story with you. My son, who, as you know, went to the new journalism program at Colorado CU Boulder, graduated in May, I guess I was out there. And he was desperately looking for an internship. And I did everything I could to connect him. Emailed Lance Ulanoff at Mashable, all sorts of people. Was not able to get him an internship. However, he did get an internship at the Center for Investigative Journalism.
Whoa.
Which is a pretty good internship.
CIR is great. Yes. They CIR, are spectacular.
They're 40 years old, the longest running independent investigative reporting outfit in the
and
world.
And one of the most advanced in
well, that's why he's
visionary
working
attitude. It's just, they're just great.
Because they've created a new site called revealnews.org that's new media. Ooh. And he's going to be working there. But then it turned out, so he's become buddies with Phil Bronstein. I know you know Phil.
Yeah.
Was he your boss when you were at the
exam? No, he's too young, Phil.
He's too young. So Bronstein, who's a famous journalist, and apparently I didn't know this, had filed dispatches from El Salvador during the revolution there. And so Henry's job this summer is to go through everything he's ever written, Phil Bronstein ever wrote at the Examiner. He became editor-in-chief later. And prepare, do the research for a documentary about Phil Bronstein.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that include Sharon Stone stuff?
I don't, but probably. I mean, that's the sad thing. In fact, Henry was saying, gosh darn it, everything I could find mentions Sharon Stone. Can we just get... He married Sharon Stone briefly and also famously got bit by a lizard.
Bitten by a... Well, not a lizard, by a Komodo dragon, was
Komodo
it?
Komodo dragon, yeah.
Seriously bitten, severely injured, but...
On his foot.
Came through.
Yeah, he came through. It's one of those horrible things that end up being kind of comedic.
Yeah. Wow, congratulations to Henry.
I know. Isn't that
that's phenomenal?
I had nothing to do with it. He just, I don't know how, you know.
All the better.
Yeah. Actually, it goes back to his birth. Because I think it was was when he was a baby, or maybe when my other child, Abby, was a baby. I think it was when Abby was a baby. My wife, after the baby was born, would go back to the Cal Pacific Medical Center for baby mommy and me classes where you learn how to nurse and all that stuff. And she met a very lovely lady who'd also had a baby at the same time. And she came back and said, oh, I just made great friends with this wonderful woman and her child. Her name is, her name is Maggie Hurst. Should I know that name? And I said, yeah.
That's where the will connection comes.
So, yeah. So it really goes back to that.
Oh, wow. I was just about to ask you.
Maggie's married to Will Hurst, who ended up, the Hurst became great friends. And and so I guess Henry got called Will, and Will got him the job. So, because Will is a big benefactor to the CIR.
You bet he is.
Yeah. Which is great.
That's just great. Congratulate him. And then tell him when he's done with the internship, you know what he's doing?
What? Oh, he's getting a graduate degree at CUNY. I agree.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Wait, shouldn't he get a journalism job first?
He does have one.
Actually, what I told him is this is an internship, but this is going to turn into a job and probably for life, right? Stay at the CIR. Why not?
That's they're a great place. They do some amazing things. They do news as comics. They do plays and dramas around to communicate news.
You might have heard of them on NPR. They do a lot of reports on NPR. But yeah, if you go to revealnews.org, this is their new kind of new media site, and it's really good. Yeah. It's really good. And go ahead.
Do they pay?
Well, he's not getting paid right now, but they do have money because they are. I mean, it's nonprofit, but they are. I think
well endowed.
There's a button that says donate on the page.
I'm just curious because, like, the more prestigious the journalism internship,
precisely.
The less it paid.
Yes.
So I did my journalism internship at Texas Highway Patrol magazine.
Where
I laid out all the stories, edited and commissioned freelancers as a sophomore.
Yeah.
But
that's how you
I did it because they paid.
Well, even better.
At the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, we require an internship after two semesters and going into the third and final. And if the employer does not pay, we pay. We raise money to do that so that every student can afford to do the required internship.
Yeah, and it was one of my deals with Henry because I think internships are so important. Oh, and most of them are, if not unpaid, mildly paid.
Yes.
I think we pay $5 a day or something. Those jobs are really how you get a real job. Those are the people the skills you learn, but also the people you meet. And very often, working free for someone is a great way to get a paid job with somebody.
Yes.
So I told Henry, if you do go out of school and get an internship, I will continue to support you for a little while anyway.
Is he living?
They're in Emeryville. He's living here in Petaluma. Commute.
Yeah, so that's not too bad. Yeah.
Yeah, he goes to the San Francisco Library every day because. After the Examiner was sold, they didn't digitize any of it. It's all on microfiche. So he's learning a really useful skill as a journalist, how to use a microfiche reader.
Well, if he runs across any old Take Five columns by Jeff Jarvis.
I know. I thought that was hysterical. So, and I told him, you got to read up on the history of the San Francisco Examiner and the Chronicle. I had to tell him, in the old days, every town would have two papers, a morning paper and an afternoon paper, at least two. But over time, there wasn't enough money for both. So it ended up usually being one paper. And then in some towns, no paper. And what's paper would be the next question.
Yeah.
We live in an interesting age. So how long did you work for the Texas Highway Patrol?
I think it was two semesters.
See, that's a great internship.
But I also was an RA at the time, and I was a substitute babysitting or a substitute daycare teacher. So I could have actual, like,
good for you.
Enough money.
Spending money. You worked your way through school.
Good for you.
I worked in the dining halls because that was the highest hourly wage, which I think at the time was like $3.50 an hour. That's how long ago that was. But that's what I did all 4 years of school.
Plus. Wow, all 4 years.
Well, I didn't go for 4 years, but I did it for 4 years. I ended up dropping out of school and keeping the dining hall job. That was not a good career move, but...
Life goals. But your parents were real proud, Leo.
But I dropped out of school my junior year so I could work at the campus radio station. So, but that, and that paid. So I was able to do that in the dining hall. And, but I was there until my class graduated because I don't know why. I was loyal. I was loyal to them all. So, we spent a lot of time on Sunday on Twit on This Week in Tech. We had, I kind of rejiggered the panel because I want to make sure we had at least one woman. We called and got Katie Benner, who wrote the New York Times article about harassment in Silicon Valley. Really blew the lid off of it. It all started, and credit to Reid Albergati over at The Information, who broke the story of Justin Kaldbeck. And Kaldbeck, of course, a venture capitalist who was accused by at least six women of using his position of power to sexually harass women who were women entrepreneurs who were trying to get funding. I mean, that is as bad as you can get. And then Katie Benner, in her article for the New York Times, furthered the story by talking about Chris Sacca, another very well-known venture capitalist, Dave McClure of another very famous, and Mark Cantor, a very famous entrepreneur, all three of whom apparently did something similar. In fact, Dave McClure, in Medium, shortly after the New York Times article, wrote a mea culpa, a confessional piece, in which he said, "I'm a jerk. You got me," and it stepped down from his position. Chris Sacca has. I'm a creep. I'm sorry. Was the name of that story? Chris Sacca has continued to kind of deny the allegations, as has Mark Cantor. But nevertheless, these are well-known people in Silicon Valley. Not so much Justin, but these two, very
Mark Cantor's. Mark Cantor's was much worse. You know, he said that. Well, I acted like a jerk to get rid of her.
Yeah, he really
denied
it.
That was
awful.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's clear that at least some of these allegations are founded in fact. I mean. Both Kaldbeck and McClure have left their positions, and in fact, the Kaldbeck's fund has been dissolved.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
McClure apparently had decided to quit earlier, but as it turns out, now there's still a lot. By the way, there's still a lot of conversation about all this in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. He apparently they knew about this, and they didn't maybe act on it as quickly as they should. Christine Tsai, who is his partner and now runs the fund. 500 startups, says, I didn't know, but he said he was going to step down earlier this year anyway. And now, anyway, there's a lot more to this story. And we don't need to go into the deets of these specific story, as I'm much more interested. And I know, Stacey, you wanted to talk about this in the culture. I have to say, though, the conversation is really important. And I have to say that as we've started talking about this, I've heard from everybody I know, oh, yeah, I've been harassed. And not just in the tech business, but every woman has been harassed at least once, if not many times.
But how much worse is the tech business?
That's a good question.
That's.
I don't think it is.
Okay. Well, whoa. Okay. I would say I've worked in finance. So I worked when I was very young. My first job was bond traders and working at the bond buyer.
That's a bunch of bros.
It's a bunch of bros. It's a very
big swinging, yeah. You know what's.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, there's harassment there. Then I worked actually here in Austin where I dealt with a lot of the real estate guys. And they were at the time, I guess you could get porn on your smartphones. And I vividly remember sitting at a table, like at a gala with some real estate guys, and they were like showing me the porn on their smartphone. And I'm a 23-year-old kid.
Yeah, isn't that sweet?
I'm like, ew.
My wife worked in the construction industry, similar.
Oh, yeah.
Similar. Yeah. Very few women and a very macho culture.
And then, yeah, tech guys are also bad. So I think let us say, oh, hey, I think the issue here is that the tech industry is not as enlightened as they maybe thought they were.
Yes, and not as diverse as it needs to be.
Well, yep. We've known that forever. I mean, I was kind of getting to that from an economic diversity when I was asking about internships in journalism being paid, for example. That's a different kind of diversity. We're not talking about that here. But, I mean, these are conversations everyone should be having across the board, both economic, racial, gender. All of that needs to be if we want to fix where we are, right? So those are the big macro kind of questions.
But boys will be boys.
Wrong.
If there aren't enough women around to say, knock the heck out and stop it.
So that's not, I mean, and most women aren't going to do it because boys still have the power and
right.
you don't want to be seen
right.
as.
That's right. So until women are equals in power, I would submit that's going to be a problem.
You should not say the word boys will be boys. You as a person, Leo, should say, hey, there's not enough women in power. I'm going to say, hey, stop it. Don't do that. And I've worked for some real jerks, and I've worked for people who are amazing. And I'll call out Om for being really amazing because
He set a great culture.
He did. And, you know, I remember someone writing on the bottom of a blog post. It was a picture from one of our structure events, and it was a picture of me sitting talking to some person at a cloud computing event. And the person wrote, great legs. And I saw this and I was like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. And Om just without even thinking about it, just deleted it and was like, sent a note to the person, was like, screw you. We don't want your kind here on our site. And
good for Om. I love that. I don't say boys will be boys to in any way condone it or even say it's okay, but just that this is what happens when you get a bunch of men together. You go in a locker room.
It doesn't have to happen.
It does. I agree. It shouldn't happen, but it does. And somebody in the chat room saying, "I worked in construction. There's not a single construction office in the country that doesn't have a adult calendar on the wall." Now, if there were women executives, that would stop immediately.
It might not. Some women internalize a lot of this.
I guess. I'm looking at Google's diversity report, which just came out. This is overall 69% men, 31% women in general. If I go to tech, which is what we really care about, it goes down to 20% women. The thing I see also very shameful, 1% black, 3% Hispanic.
Wow.
53% white. The next largest ethnicity is Asian, 39%. So this is Google who's apparently trying very hard to create diversity. But if you are in an environment like this, I think that's very hard on the 1 in 5 women.
But Leo, yes, I think that's true. The what should frighten us more is that when one person has the courage to come out and expose this, the number who then follow.
Yeah, look what's happened.
BC or whether it's Bill Cosby or any of these cases. So, you know, it's not a numbers game. I think Stacey's quite right. It's a power game no matter what. And even if the numbers are 50-50, there's intimidation that goes beyond even that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, aggressions of all kinds. And I agree with you, Stacey. We should all be more like Om. And even if there aren't women in the workplace, there should be men in the workplace who say, knock it off.
Exactly.
And I would say, so here's my advice to guys in the workplace. It's just basic rules that I can't believe they don't know. But
their mothers didn't teach them.
Their mothers didn't, or their fathers. I mean,
Sorry.
I'm like, we are not putting this all on the women. Sorry, Jeff.
But the real problem is that men.
Oh, wait, Leo.
Go ahead.
Please give you my rule. Okay. Rule is, I should never know if you want to sleep with me in a work environment.
That's
and you are dealing
rule.
With a woman.
That's a good rule. I like that.
Any woman you're working with should never know if you want to sleep with her or not, because it's completely irrelevant to your professional relationship.
Yes.
Period. And if you follow that rule, you're great.
That doesn't mean just not saying I want to sleep with you.
No, it means all of the flirty, weird things that people do.
Yeah. Ugh. But I think that's a very good rule. and the thing I would say is that most men want to sleep with most women. So the difficulty and the reason men kind of gloss this over is, well, we're all thinking this anyway. So it really is. It's got to be at a behavioral level. I don't think you can teach men not to think that.
Right. I don't care what they think. I just should never know.
I love that rule.
I work with so many men and I work really closely with lots of men in. I honestly, I don't give it much thought. But when I was thinking about this rule, I was like, God, did any of them want to sleep with me? And I have no idea.
Good.
Zero.
That's good. I like that a lot.
So.
And you can tell I don't want to sleep with you, right?
I don't even think about it.
No. It shouldn't come up. That's such a great rule. I've never heard it articulated like that. And I think that that's, if it comes down to it, that's it. But you really got to say, that doesn't just mean you say something. It means showing you porn at a dinner. It means having a sexy calendar even in your office.
Treating you with respect.
Yeah, treating women with respect. Yeah.
And also, Stacey, let me say this, if I may, because I'm an offender on this one. It means not interrupting.
I just interrupted you. I mean, we're on a talk show. I don't think anything of us when we interrupt.
Well, and there's a technical reason for interrupting because we're on Skype and there's some delay between.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take the handicap points, but
I agree with you. I agree with you.
I watched a panel last week, or VidCon, and there were two men and one woman, and she tried like three times to break in and was interrupted, and then finally sat back with that grin that said, "Yeah, okay, well, I'm normal." And we're just not aware of it enough. I'm not aware of it
enough. It's mansplaining. It's interrupting. There's a lot of that too. See, so it does go to even beyond that, not knowing that you.
So, Stacey, let me ask you this: as African American men were being shot by police in America, and we saw leading African Americans say that they had, including the President of the United States, saying that they had the talk with their children. As a woman, did anyone ever have a talk with you, mother, coworker, mentor, about what would happen to you in the workplace and how to deal with it?
Let's see. I'm going to say no. I mean, my mom was a geophysicist, and so she was in the oil industry, which was hugely male dominated. And yeah, I mean, she met my dad on an oil boat, though, so I'm kind of like, No one ever had the talk. I will say I talk with my daughter about, I train her to notice things. Like we were in Harry Potter world, and this is kind of silly, but some little boy who was probably her age got on the train, and he and his family got in, and we were on our side, and the little boy just stopped. Talked and talked. And I finally, you know, I did not tell the boy to shut up, but I was like, man, I would tell my daughter to shut up at this point because it was really annoying. But the boy's family didn't tell him to shut up. And Anna, my daughter, you know, she turns to me and she's like, man, he talked a lot. I was like, he did. And I bet, you know, if you had been talking, I would have told you to stop talking, but no one shut him up. In fact, they kind of were all grinning and like humoring him. And that's, again, that could be a totally just different parenting style.
It can go both ways too, because my daughter would dominate dinner conversations. And my wife and I often talked about how do we get Henry into the conversation? The poor kid just never gets a word in edgewise. So it can go. That's a personality style too. It's not merely a gender style.
That's true.
Let me show you Apple's diversity report. Just to be fair, looks like Apple's doing a little bit of a better job with Google. Now they talk more about what we've done lately than the overall. But you see, new hires 37% in 2016. But here,
do they break down tech versus store and such?
They don't do no, and I wish they did. Yes, store changes things, doesn't it? And I wish they did say, you know, among our tech employees, our engineers, they don't. At least not as far as I could see. But here is the number you want to look at to compare it to Google's is the bottom number here. So 19% Asian. This is totals. 9% Black, 12% Hispanic. They don't. This is ethnicity. It's not about gender. And then I think the big story too is pay equity, right? We know that doesn't happen still. And then Google's been dinged for not paying its females. Oh,
yeah, I was going to see. Did they ever give that information to
I don't know what the new Department
of Labor?
I don't know what the latest is on that.
Does the current Department of Labor give it?
Do they care? that's a really interesting question. You know, that was a story we talked about a couple of months ago, but nothing. Google refuses to hand over salary data after Labor Department accuses it of underpaying women. That's in June. So I guess they're continuing to do that. This is current. So Google says, of course we pay women fine, but we're not, and the numbers would be misleading. I don't know.
Well, and that's two different issues. So harassment, one issue, right?
Is it two different issues?
They're related, but I would say a bigger problem in Silicon Valley. So if you're dividing it into harassment and pay equality or discrimination based on gender, so separate from sexual harassment, there's more on the discrimination by gender that I think it's a different topic. And it's also part of like Silicon Valley's mythos of, you know, the incredibly hardworking entrepreneur with no family, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that dings women too.
It dings everybody. So, I mean, that's a terrible culture, right? It is.
But women bear the brunt of that culture. And they bear it not just in the tech. They bear it in other industries like law and finance.
I go home to this issue all the time because my wife runs our company. She's a CEO. As I said, she used to work in construction. And she's tough. She's really tough. And she had to be tough, I think, to work as one of the sole females in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. And she's tough today. And she's been harassed endlessly. So she's tough enough to stand up to it in most cases, I think in every case.
But I don't think
not everybody is, and not everybody
shouldn't
in a position
have,
where they could
to
be.
Do that.
You shouldn't have to be tough.
I agree.
You don't know what your wife has internalized or where she could have focused her energies and what she could have done if she didn't have to deal with all that BS.
Well, it's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
Maybe she would have married someone else and had an even better life. No.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Jeez, what do you do to you today?
I'll just have you know, I keep my harassment to the bedroom.
That's where your harassment belongs.
Hey, honey, you're looking good today. Anyway, I'm glad. I mean, Stacey said before the show started, I want to talk about this. We did make a point of talking about it on Sunday. It is a huge story. And I think the Silicon Valley story is a big deal because we think of ourselves, tech people think of ourselves as enlightened.
Exactly.
Merit-based. We think it's a meritocracy. But the numbers belie that. And now the facts belie it. And, I mean, it's, you know, again, credit to Susan Fowler, her blog that blew the lid off Uber. I have to say, Jeff, now I'm going to get political. Some of this comes from the top, right? And the climate in this country and the tribalism in this country. And there is definitely, it almost feels like a retrenchment, a move backwards in terms of, what we used to call women's lib in terms of empowering women. And I feel that's really unfortunate. But there's definitely – same thing's happened with racism in this country. There are There are a group of people in this country who have suddenly become empowered and because of the election of President Trump and kind of the general tenor of his tweets. By the way, you've come around to my point of view, haven't you, that we let Trump tweet.
I'm coming around. Oh, absolutely, I agree. I get so angry when journalists say he shouldn't tweet. It would be wrong for him. Why shouldn't he stop tweeting? No, let him implicate himself.
Well,
every crime possible.
It is bad for the country that he's tweeting. I suppose it's bad for our reputation, bad for our
relationships. It's a true view of where we're going.
But at the same time, it's an insight into the mind of the man, of the leader of the free world. I think that's a valuable tool.
You know, back to your prior point. I think you need to have data to say whether the Delta. You know, where is the Delta going? Because certainly before the current administration, we had plenty of problems with racism and sexism.
It's purely anecdotal, I agree.
But what you also see is that when a group is threatened, they respond as threatened animals, right? Yeah. And so that's what we're seeing when it comes. That's what the basis of the nationalism we're seeing is that the white majority of America, the male majority of
soon
America,
not
the male
to be
powerful
a majority.
America. Is not the majority or not the powerful as much. And so then they react. So then you see things like the so-called horribly named men's rights movement You see Gamergate. You see all that kind of stuff emerging, and it's a reaction against a trend that is going against them, and it's kind of a last gasp fight, and that's what I believe is going on right now.
That's what I hope is going on.
But it's a painful stage, isn't it? I also think that the nation is challenged as an institution, and thus nationalism is rising.
I would
white
also
majorities are challenged.
I would also to be on, to point out that Lisa says this. She says, if I had been the woman I am in many other countries in the world, I would be dead by now. And We should point out that, as you know, we talk about how bad it is for women here, but it is far worse in many countries of the world.
Well, so I was talking to a colleague today about. Oh, sorry, Stacey, go ahead.
I was just going to say that kind of relativism that is nothing. It is.
I agree. It's still bad, but I just want to say that we've made some progress.
Well, let me try it this way. So I was talking with my colleague who's going to run the News Integrity Initiative today about diversity is one of the pillars that we want to face, because we think that news organizations that don't have diversity don't understand the communities that they are to serve and reflect, and having greater diversity will help them with that. It's pretty straightforward. We at CUNY take that as a major part of our mission. So then we were talking about, I said, well, how do we internationalize that topic, because we're supposed to be international? And as I was thinking about it, let's be very, very clear. The United States, we are bad at this. We still have a great long way to go with this. However, there is far more discussion of diversity in the United States because we've been bad at it, because we have a racial problem, because we had slavery, because of all these reasons, that if you go to Europe, you hear far less discussion of diversity and the impacts of diversity on companies and on how they operate. So the weird thing is, even though we're way behind in where we should be, we have a discussion here that I think could be also brought to other countries, could be brought to Europe and elsewhere in the world, that would be beneficial to never stand above and say that we're high and mighty and doing so well. We're not. But the discussion itself needs to be exported. Does that make any sense?
It does. Leo's like, where's my gadgets?
No, not at all. I'm very willing to talk about this. I think it's very important.
Yes, and I think there's a couple things here, and it's hard to talk about right now because it feels like we're in kind of the nadir of our diversity experiments in some ways. But like immigration and opening our borders is unequivocally helped make America truly great, right?
Yes.
And many other countries, if you look at like Japan and parts of Europe where immigration is frowned upon and not, they don't welcome people in, they have problems associated with that. So in a lot of ways, it is a conversation that everyone should be having. And so I agree. Long way of saying I agree.
It's happening. This is why it's kind of shocking to us in Silicon Valley, because we really thought we were better than this. Look at Tesla, which you would assume is a very forward-looking company. They've had some serious accusations, and now they have a diversity panel. On International Women's Day, they invited their female staff to a diversity panel. Actually, it was originally going to be an essential oils lunch and learn. But then people complained that, wait a minute, that's what you want us to talk about as ladies on International Women's Day? No, well, let's have a diversity panel. And it turned up even more issues. New allegations, according to Engadget, are going to make it hard for Tesla to downplay the accusations.
It's The Guardian did the reporting on this.
Yes, actually, let's go to The Guardian.
Sorry, hold on.
No,
I read
you're
this
absolutely
this
right.
And I was like, boom.
I read it in Engadget, but it's linking back to this. She took on Tesla for discrimination. Now others are speaking up. It's too big to deny. A female engineer who came forward with claims of harassment says she was fired in retaliation, but now other women are stepping forward. So instead of discovering essential oils, they're maybe focusing a little bit more on one of the
yeah, basically they when they did this open forum instead of the essential oils, they heard about how women would avoid parts of the factory floor because they were getting catcalled.
They were they called them predator zones.
Yes. Which kind of tells you a lot about what it's like to be a woman in some of these places and how the word inappropriate covers a multitude of sins, all of which are bad, and some of them are more inappropriate than others.
I have to say, I think a lot of this is because we as men are not taught that it's bad. There's this kind of sense that, oh, you know, boys will be boys. That's why you didn't like me to use that phrase, but that's the phrase that's used, and that's how guys are, and they're always going to hit on women and give them cat calls. And, you know, the gals, they secretly like that.
What about younger women, though, Leo, or younger men?
I don't know. I'm an old man, so I can't speak for younger men.
I'm curious about what's happening generationally and how attitudes have shifted. Because, like, my generation, we got a lot of the quote-unquote nice guys, which aren't nice. They're just like, I'll pretend not to be a jerk on the surface so I get someone to sleep with me.
That's I've been using that for years. It's very effective. Go ahead.
Yeah, Leo plays this cuddly thing. You know,
the nice guy thing. Yeah, it's always a good one. Except that, well, never mind.
Again,
it's going to get even worse. Say that, you know, the girls always like the bad boys. That's the problem.
Well, that, yeah, that's.
I bought a leather nice jacket.
Nice guys lose out.
Sorry, Stacey. Go ahead. Jeff, you and I, we're going to go in the corner now.
Where is my punch, Leo, button? Where is that button? So the point is, yes, boys should be taught better. I would encourage everyone, including you, Leo, to excise the phrase boys will be boys from your vocabulary and start making people acting as a role model and then also speaking up. I mean, guys can see when guys are behaving badly and you should just be like, yo, dude, that's not cool.
Yeah.
Well, so here's a question too about our social age. I'm fascinated by the Redditor who confessed to creating the
wasn't that interesting
Trump beats up CNN video and did an apology of sorts, and CNN decided that he was I presume it's he was
he was a troll
confessing enough that they wouldn't reveal him and wouldn't out him, and there's some debate about that. But what strikes me so much is that how far overboard does an individual or a group or a society have to go to realize that bad behavior is bad? Do we have no hope of getting rid of trollish and misogynistic behavior unless it goes so far overboard? Unless the president of the United States grabs a woman by...
CNN autoplay, sorry.
God bless CNN. Yeah. Will CNN never learn that it has to go overboard with autoplay before discovery and everyone hates it? So I mean, this is, I don't know, what is it going to take to recapture civility and sense, or to capture it in the first place? If we have to go this far overboard, somebody posts a whole mess of violence against media and anti-Semitic things to say, oh, right, I was just trolling. No, I was going too far.
That's what was interesting. I wonder if that will often be the reaction or the result. If you out a troll, they'll go, oh, you know, I don't really believe this anti-Semitic stuff. I just was trolling.
I was doing it for the lulz. Or the venture capitalist who says, okay, I confess, I'm a jerk because I have to.
Right.
That's the thing my PR person told me to do.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that there isn't a possibility to learn the lesson and to recant, and that's fine. And that's exactly what someone should do. So I welcome that. But how do we teach the lesson before getting over the cliff? And I don't know.
And by the way, the cliff were right on the brink. There were a number of CNN journalists tweeted, I'm afraid for my life. That feels like a call to violence by the president of the United States. And that actually, it puts me in fear of my safety.
So this goes to Stacey's point that what you have, we all have to shun the bad behavior. You can't sit back silently and let it happen and then say, oh, yeah, I agree with that. That was awful. I hated it when it happened. Have to develop the norms and mores to show that we do not accept bad behavior, whether it's misogynistic or racist or whatever it is. Sorry, Stacey.
Oh, no, I was, we used to do that, although in America, and this is a tension in our society. We used to do that, and you done to a certain way, you become a very censored and repressive society, right? And you could say, hey, being respectful of people is not awful and censoring and whatever, but you know, it does require us to have some sort of common norms. And right now we don't have common norms. We're fragmenting into all these crazy different norms. And it's one thing to say bygones be bygones, but we're also kind of shouting all our weird norms in these social media bubbles where other people can stumble across them. And I think this is really like structurally and from a societal perspective, really fascinating. And I'm not sure what we do with that because, I mean, you could argue my making ribs is really offensive to someone who's a vegan. And I'm not making fun of that. I mean, there are people who would feel very strongly about that. And if I were in certain cultures, you know, making ribs would be a real problem. And we're all living together in these bubbles where we see everybody else's bubbles. And
here's an interesting question. Actually, the chat room kind of made me think of this because there's people saying CNN is threatening to dox this guy. And what about free speech? Does free speech protect anonymous speech?
Free speech, this is the great misnomer. CNN, Reddit, Google, Facebook, Twit, the New York Times, all have the right to edit as a matter of their free speech. Allowing and enabling anyone's speech about anything in any manner is not the free speech that we're talking about. Government stopping you from speaking freely is the question of censorship. But CNN, Reddit, all those places have the right to edit. That's part of their right of free speech.
XKCD's famous cartoon 1357. The right to free speech means the government can't arrest you for what you say. It doesn't mean anyone else has to listen to your BS or host you while you share it. The First Amendment doesn't shield you from criticism or consequences. If you're yelled at, boycotted, have your show canceled, get banned from the internet community, your free speech rights are not being violated. It's just the people listening think you're an a-hole and they're showing you the door. So,
amen.
To your point. Okay. So then, what do you think of CNN doxing that guy? What do you think of that?
They didn't. CNN didn't dox. They chose not to dox.
They said we know who it is,
but they didn't reveal.
Right.
They didn't reveal.
Is that the right journalistically? Is that the right thing to do? This is somebody who the president of the United States passed this on. This fed into his Twitter feed and hate of the media. It was a newsworthy event. It was newsworthy of who did it. Do people have a right to know who did the, not a right, go back. As journalistically, do you feel a responsibility?
Appropriate, yeah.
To what, to not have doxed him?
No, to dox him.
I think it's right. I think it is to dox him. So what makes CNN think in this case, we're not going to reveal?
Well, maybe as somebody in the chat room points out, the threat is if you don't do it anymore, we will reveal you.
But is that CNN's role? Isn't that up to the public to decide?
Right.
Now,
I would say it's a natural consequence of throwing something like that out there with CNN as the target. Like, that's the targeted individual speaking up and saying, hey, don't do that again.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. Is it chilling? No, because free speech is about government suppression of speech, not about facing the consequences, right, of your speech.
Yeah, this right. I keep on coming back to this question of civility, that the fake news, lack of facts people, argument.
People aren't civil, Jeff.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I meant when I said boys will be boys. And men are very much not civil.
if it weren't for the
civilizing force of the females, I think this would be a very different world.
Okay, that is crazy sexist.
I think it's true. I think it's true.
I can tell you that I am not necessarily as civil as...
Oh, you're bad.
My husband is very civil.
Ah.
Okay, but Stacey, put it another way. In terms of going overboard... How often have you run across a female troll?
I know many women who are trollish in their behavior, who may not be trolling aggressively on Twitter, but that's a very different.
That's a good point. You're right.
Okay.
I agree with you. You're right.
I mean, I have said very negative things about a woman. Like, just, I have been known to use words that are really awful, and I am not at all civilized. And if I know. See, but that's the point. The point
is
people are not
crumbling around me.
Women have a veneer of civilization.
There is. But Leo, we're not going there. We're not going there. No. No.
No, you know what? Here's where I'll go. In general, humans are pretty bad. We are we are flawed.
But we controlled it better.
And one of the goals humanity should have is to be better. All of us. And that's called civilization, right? And I think as a civil society, and I think one of the things that you and I, Jeff, are upset about is the breakdown of civil society on places like Twitter. Hey, it's not just us. Ed Sheeran's unhappy too. Did you see he's quitting Twitter because of mean tweets? I don't think quitting Twitter stops the mean tweets, but. At least you don't have to
look at them.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Twitter rule. You can just mute these people, but they're still going to be insulting you and saying horrible things about you and threatening you. But you don't have to see it. That's the Twitter rule.
Yeah. That's the only rule. Twitter says, we'll publish anything. Just, you know.
So I think, in a way,
that's what this whole conversation could boil down to, is are we moving forward as humans in becoming better? Or are we moving backwards and reverting to a less civilized state?
I think it fits in spurts, because I think that you test the limits and then you pull back and renegotiate.
Hope you're right.
I hope. I'm optimistic, but I'm to a fault.
The whole conversation may be moot when we get into a nuclear war with Korea.
Yes, that will be very exciting.
There are other fish being fried at this very moment. Hey, but meanwhile, I have a gadget that will scan barcodes of stuff in my refrigerator. Anybody?
I've got one, Bueller? Too. It just arrived. I thought we were going to go for a Google story.
I often feel guilty. I think we've talked about this before. Because sometimes, you know, technology journalism and what we do at Twit is about the toy store.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of toys. But then sometimes I feel like we're using those toys to distract ourselves from things that actually have real meaning and purpose and consequences. Unlike the Amazon Scala wand, which has absolutely no meaning, no purpose, and zero consequence.
Is this the Dash wand with Alexa?
Yeah.
Okay, don't say her name.
Yeah. It's the Amazon wand. So I'm still waiting. Neither Stacy nor I are as fashionista enough to get our invitation to buy the look.
Ah, Amazon, come on.
Come on, look at her. She's a fashion plate.
Wonderful things you could style for me. Wonderful clothes.
And I would submit that I ain't no slouch in that department either there.
You own a fedora. My goodness.
I own many fedoras.
Oh, multiple fedoras.
I buy hats. I buy jackets and clothing. I'm a very stylish fella. And I think, frankly, anybody who wants the look should be allowed to buy it. Isn't it?
I think it actually. So I was thinking about it. Because a friend of mine wanted it, because she does quilting. And she wanted to show people, like, because her hands are busy when she's quilting. She liked the idea of telling it to snap a picture for like her blogs or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about that when I'm working, like installing a gadget, you know, and I've got my hands, you know, I could have it take pictures while I'm installing. So you get a step-by-step of, you know, and if you're really lucky, maybe you get Stacy getting fried with the electrical circuit.
So yeah. I thought I was okay with having cameras everywhere. I really did. In fact, remember, Stacy, I ordered and you called me a doofus for doing it, the Nest IQ cams. So I got two of them and I put them up in the house about a week ago. And the idea of the IQ cam is a couple of interesting things. One, it has a 4K camera, but it doesn't stream the full 4K, but it can zoom in. So if it sees faces or movement, it can zoom in on it. It does face recognition. And in theory, although I found it didn't really, I don't know how long it was going to take, but it would start to recognize people in your house and not notify you about them, only notify you when a stranger was in the house. But of course, when you first put it in, everybody's a stranger. It was telling me about balloons. It was telling me.
Did you draw little faces on them?
I didn't have to. It was so funny. He said, "There's somebody in your house," and it zoomed in on these Mylar balloons. Well, not really. Anyway, I thought I was okay with cameras because, you know, I got cameras everywhere. I got all the Amazon stuff, and then after a little while, I got a little kind of creeped out by it, and I ended up taking them out, and they're here at work, where there's so many cameras anywhere. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
You don't pick your nose in your office, right?
Well, I started to realize, I mean, that we have one in the living room and one in my office, the IQ, Nest IQ. And I know no one's seeing it but me unless they get hacked. But, you know, you got to, and you've said this too, a Nest has good security. I turned on two-factor so nobody could, you know, hack my or make it hard to hack my account. But I still, the idea, and it's this little green glowing light. It has night vision, very good night vision. And I just kind of got creeped out by it.
Ooh.
Yeah. No one wants to see your, like, midnight refrigerator runs when
exactly.
You're in your PJs.
Exactly.
Ah, sandwiches.
Exactly.
So I'm gonna throw it out there again. I would try the NetAtmo because none of that goes to the cloud, and it actually has better, based on what you just told me, better facial recognition because you train it in your first, initial setup.
That's something that the Nest should do. They should have training.
So NetAtmo.
NetAtmo, and if it doesn't go to the cloud, where does it go?
You can set it up on your own FTP server, or you can actually, if you want, you can actually send it to Dropbox, or you can save it to an SD card.
It's French, that's why.
Yes, it is. It's European.
They're more privacy focused.
Well, right. To a fault, we'll get to that story in a minute.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we will. All right, NetAtmo, and they have an outdoor and an indoor one. I've got the Nests outdoors. Those I don't mind. I don't mind if critters get caught in the camera. The truth is also, there was really no justification for me having cameras in the house. We're not worried about getting robbed or anything. So
People put them in there for pets because everybody, whenever I ask about this, they're like, I love seeing my pets.
Yeah.
And some people put it.
I don't love my pets that much.
Well, there's also the front door. And okay, this is a very specific use case, but we have a fish tank and we bought snails and then we went out of town for a week and we were very concerned about the fate of the snails.
But the problem is, okay, so do you get motion activations from snails or no?
Well, so I just thought, we could just have a camera that we could check in on the live view. I wasn't worried about motion activations, but you're right.
Your snail hasn't moved. Well, maybe it has.
Only with time lapse.
I wish I could get my money back on the Nest IQ, but I can't. It's really a great camera. I'll show you the camera. I don't know. Did we take him down? I don't see it.
You can give them away.
I could give them to
Stacy. Or you can sell them on eBay.
Somebody unplugged it. Why was it unplugged? I guess even my staff doesn't like the idea. They unplugged them. Well, they have a right to. They have a right to. Look at that. Look at that eye glaring at you. Do you want that in your... Doesn't that look like it's... I'm watching you.
Did I show you the NetAtmo? I can go grab mine.
Well, I'm looking at the website. It looks like it looks more like a bar than a...
Yeah, it's just a friendly cylinder.
It's a friendly cylinder.
Well, it is. I mean, like, it doesn't look like... Yours looks like an eye. Mine looks like this... It used to be on my desk, but I cleaned up. This is why I don't clean up, you guys.
So do you have it for, besides snails, other pets? Or is it...
I had it because... It has I really like the facial recognition feature and the way they implemented it.
It seems like a good idea, yeah.
I keep waiting for companies to use that part of the API. So like IFT has NetAtmo, but it doesn't use the facial recognition part of the API. And maybe that's a privacy setting because they're French. And I would love for it to be like, hey, I haven't seen Stacy, her daughter, or her husband for, 15 minutes. I'm going to arm the security system.
Yeah.
So it does that already, but that information, I would love for that information to be used for some of my other devices too.
So the Nest does that, but it does it based on your smartphone. So it says as soon as you move out of range with your smartphone.
But my daughter doesn't have a smartphone.
Right. No, I like it. Why do that? Why not do the recognition? Here's the image from my studio. My studio is on right now. And it's a pretty detailed image.
That's a lot of hats. Why?
That's our Leo.
What is happening there? Oh, my gosh. Is that the ostrich sleeping pillow?
Yes, it is. How did you recognize that? That's exactly what
I am obsessed with that thing.
Oh, look, somebody's stealing my hat. Quick. Get him. Go get him, Nest. The other thing I like about this is
both the Nest
and the Ring video doorbell, I can pipe to the Echo Show, which is this is the Echo Show is the one, and you can see it on my desk right now. With the screen on it, so you can say Echo show my my front door or Echo show the studio cam, and you can see it on the Echo, which is kind of neat.
How was your latency? Because I did that with my August, and I was like, show me my front door, and I counted to six seconds before it.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
Okay,
with the Ring, the first time it says it's asleep. But presumably somebody's ringing the doorbell, or if there's motion, it will be awake. And there is, 6 seconds, that sounds about right, which is a little bit of an issue because, the person might have rung the doorbell and left by the time you see them.
I wanted to, so when we did the 4th of July party yesterday, I had this great idea for a use case, and I don't know if it would be feasible, but getting like the Arlo outdoor cameras or... I guess the Logitech I know has an Echo Show integration. I'm not sure about the Arlo cameras. But being able to show the parents their kids playing on the roof while we're all downstairs drinking and the kids are all running around, that would have been actually kind of a cool use case. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the Echo Show a lot. The IQ camera is a little less. I do like my doorbell. Camera. That's a use case that makes sense.
That makes sense.
And an outdoor camera makes sense. An indoor camera makes a little less sense to me.
Yeah, other than the snails. My husband, when we go out of town for a long time, he does like having an indoor camera.
But people are pointing out that you can do this on the phone. Of course you can. All these apps. And I'm just showed you my Nest camera on the web. But having it right there via voice control and... To me, the Echo Show belongs on your desk. It's a desk. It's like, it's a great, or a kitchen, but desk. It's like a counter thing.
It is. So we have ours on, this is my breakfast bar. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
I always say my bar, but it's not
breakfast
a bar.
Yeah.
And we were actually watching Corky videos on YouTube the other
Isn't
day
that cool?
in the morning. Yeah. We were like,
on your Echo Show. And I like it that I could set up my flash. I thought it was going to be very low quality because it's so small. 1024 by 980 is fine. And I have, you could see the Tonight Show monologue from the night before. CNN has videos. I think CNBC is doing video. I think we're going to inquire because we have a flash briefing for TWIT, which is Monday through Friday, our news, Tech News Today. And then on Saturday, it's News Screensavers and Sunday, it's TWIT. And it'd be great we could put video in there. And I think that's a nice use for it. I love seeing lyrics in songs. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
I still think karaoke is a missed opportunity.
Well, you can do it, and you could sing along with a real song.
But then you sound bad next to the real person.
Well, I believe, in fact, I know because I keep getting them by accident. There are karaoke tracks on most of the music services. If you ask, used to be when you asked for the Beatles, you'd get Beatles karaoke because they didn't own the.
But we did it last week, and there were no lyrics.
So yeah, if you get the real song, there may not be lyrics. But if you get the karaoke version in Amazon, you have to ask for the karaoke version. But Google constantly serves me the karioke version things. I'm like, God,
I don't want it. Yeah, take it out.
And I don't understand why Google is so much worse because they're both pulling from Spotify. So I'm like, what is happening on the back end there?
That's interesting. Like, so using Spotify as your service on both of those.
Yeah. And I shot a little video of this of asking for certain songs and Google will always feed me the the karaoke version of these songs, whereas the Echo will feed me the right version. I have no idea why this is different.
So I use for my music on the Echo, I use Amazon Unlimited Music as well as Google Music. But I almost always get lyrics, but not always. But some for some reason, I there's some country artists that I don't get lyrics. And I just think they're not on Rap Genius or whatever it is that they use for lyrics, right?
How many music services do you pay for?
Google and Amazon. I used to pay for Spotify. I dumped it. And actually, Paul Thurrott on Windows Weekly moments ago showed me this great site that lets you import your playlists from one service to another, which is huge for me because I have all these great playlists that I miss on Spotify. It's called Stamp. It's a freeyourmusic.com. So I can finally get my Spotify playlist moved over to my Google Play Music. I might pay for Apple Music too because they now have a $99 a year tier, which is almost, what's it, like $8 a month, a little less. That's a pretty good deal. You only need one, obviously, but I only need one Echo Show, but I have three. It's because this is my job. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I dropped my battery. I'm trying to figure out. This is a bit of a puzzle.
Oh, you pull it apart.
I don't want to break it.
I have the same thing, but you do pull it apart.
Just like this?
Yeah, right,
like
before
the
show.
Like a cracker? Like a party cracker?
Yeah.
It's quite hard to pull apart.
It's also a strength test.
Do you want me to go get mine?
Oh, I did.
There you go.
I felt like I might break it. I wasn't, and of course, the last thing I'm going to do is look at a manual. All right, so put the batteries in. So this is the Amazon
Old wand. Old-fashioned batteries?
AAAs.
AAA batteries.
But I use rechargeables, so when I replace them, I'll have rechargeables. Problem with rechargeables is they tend to, over time, leak, which means you just lose the power if you don't use it. All right, so now what do? I have to set it up. There's no screen.
There's no screen. You need to get your phone.
Oh, I set it up via my Echo app.
Oh. You go to www.amazon.com/wand or Echo.
Oh, you have to do it by the web.
Uh-huh.
I can't do it with the Echo apps?
I bet you could do it by the... See, I read the manual because...
There was your mistake.
Stacey's that kind of good person.
That was your mistake.
So actually, most of the times I don't read the manual, but once I couldn't figure out how to put the batteries
That's
in...
That's exactly. I was about to get the manual out.
I clearly need a manual here.
Because it wasn't obvious. All right, so can I add a device? Set up a new device. Yeah, you're right. You have to go to the web because they have Echo Tap and Echo Dot. They don't have any of the... Choose a device, so you can't choose the wand.
So do you want me to tell you that this is going to suck and you're going to hate it? Or do you want me to...
I think I already know because I played with Megan Maroney's.
It's terrible. Well, it just hooks you into Amazon.
Well, that's all right. That's too late. I've already...
Yep.
Well, I'm hooked into Amazon, but I didn't realize I wanted to be able to export stuff to a generic list for things I didn't want for Amazon, but I don't see how that's possible. And that saddens me.
US-wand setup. Okay. Good. All right, I'm going.
If you do the UK, maybe you'll get cool spellings for all your words. And your arugula will be called Rocket.
Hello. Would you like some coriander? Allow, okay. Insert batteries. It shows you. That's good. How? Continue. So what don't you like about this?
I thought I could use it as a generic grocery list generator to an app, but really
it's only to Amazon. Yeah.
It's only to Amazon. Yeah. And so now I've got to still think before I scan something, is this something I usually buy on Amazon or not? So it doesn't make my life as effortless as I wanted it to be.
Do you have it magnetically attached to your refrigerator? That's what you're supposed to do.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Well, but most...
It also comes with a convenient hook you can attach to the wall.
It's a hideously ugly hook. I would never want that on my wall. I was like, oh.
It's just a hook. What do you mean hideously ugly? A hook is a hook.
You could have a little style to your hook.
She has high hook standards.
Apparently. All right. So, and then you're supposed to hold it till the ring turns orange, which it was stubbornly refusing to do. Maybe I put the batteries in wrong.
They both go the same direction, which is unusual.
It made noise. You know, if you're lucky enough to have Stacey on IoT, helping you install your IoT device.
Clearly not helping you enough.
Well, see, for what, you know what, I'm kind of with you because I want to try Instacart before they go out of business.
Oh, we ordered Instacart yesterday and it was great.
I think it's great. I've been told by a number of people, including my son, who's an Instacart user, that it really, I said, do you get good produce? He said, yeah, everything works really well.
Yeah, we got some produce. We got 6 bags of ice, too. Which was nice because our party, you know,
that's
it wasn't
nice.
Melted. So we got 6 bags of ice. We got some more brownie bites because they're delicious.
Oh, so they went to Costco as well as they'll go to somewhere besides.
They went to HEB.
Okay.
It's not just Whole Foods. Well, Instacart is HEB. He also told us they go to like pet stores for pet food. They'll go to CVS for like if your kid's sick and, you know, your spouse is out of town or something, you can be like, help me. I need 8 gallons of Pedialyte stat.
Pedialyte.
Exactly.
We always have Pedialyte in our pantry, just in case.
Wow. That's expensive and nasty, nasty stuff.
Yeah. We got it. Okay. Now, select your Wi-Fi network. Okay. Okay. And the idea is you're gonna scan. When you run out of stuff, you put it near the refrigerator, right?
Yeah. You can. I put mine on the refrigerator.
Right, because the idea is that you scan stuff.
Steel.
Like when you're done, you're out of milk. Before you throw out the carton, you scan it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of the whole premise? And it has a little tiny speaker and it can talk. Like it could do all the other. Oh, good, green light. That means
you can ask it what the weather is.
You can, but mm-hmm. Why would you? You know, I already have an Echo. In
well, kitchen. But what can you use only that? Can I just use that and nothing else in the Alexa family?
Yeah. It's just got
yes,
yeah,
except it doesn't pay, it doesn't play music, and thank you, Jeff. That is why.
Okay, beep this. Everybody, hold your ears. What's the weather? Oh, I have to push the button. What's the weather? So that's one different thing. It's not. It's
Santa Rosa. It's 79 degrees with mostly sunny skies.
It's like a
today. You can look for intermittent clouds.
It's like a real
high of 79 degrees and a low of 50 degrees.
It's like a really bad AM radio. It's really
yeah, well. I mean,
works,
you press it because of battery life.
Yeah. And do you press to scan? It doesn't automatically see stuff, right?
You press to scan.
Okay.
Although, for all I know, there's a giant camera in there, and Jeff Bezos checks in every now and then.
Hi, Jeff.
Does it tell you other things? Does it? Can you scan something and ask what ingredients are in it, or how many calories, or any of that kind of stuff? That's what I was talking.
Oh, that would be really interesting. What is
Let's
that?
Find
Somebody
out.
Told me
it's Dinty Moore Hearty Beef Stew. Don't you know? So I just pointed at the barcode. That's it.
I don't think you can get that at Whole Foods.
Oh, okay. Problem one: it doesn't tell you what it scanned.
Oh.
Yeah, you got to. It's on your Amazon list.
Oh.
Yeah.
It should say, "I think that's Dinty Moore Beef Stew."
Yeah, it should. I'm canceling mine right now.
That's dopey. You don't know. That's one of the things Megan complained about.
Yeah.
So you need to go to your
Amazon
shopping
cart.
List, which I don't even know where that is. Plus, there's stupid stuff. Oh, yeah. Look. Dinty Moore Beef Stew scanned with Dash. It did see it. Look at that.
And I think you can tell it to buy stuff. And it will actually buy it.
Oh, so look! Wait a minute. Can I just point out what it's going to order if I go ahead and order is
pack.
A pack of 12.
That's a lot of beef stew.
That's a lot of beef stew, young man.
Usually ships within 1 to 2 months. So in September, I'm going to get, for reasons I really don't understand, a carton of 12 Dinty Moore beef stews.
Yeah, I would maybe.
Not good.
Maybe don't hit buy.
But that's the other bad thing is it is, well, I guess that's good in this case. It's not going to do anything really. It just makes a list.
Yeah. Well, no, if you say buy.
When?
Not if you say buy and scan, but if you say buy.
Oh, you can still do that with the, which you would do with a regular one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Buy underwear.
Oh, God.
I couldn't find anything for underwear, so I've added underwear to the shopping list.
So it's just like a regular Echo in that respect.
Yes.
So what does
buy
it show a
pilot
picture of certain-
pens?
Amazon's choice for Pilot pens is Pilot Precise V7 Black Ball Pens. Doesn't box. It's $12.16 plus tax. Would you like to buy it?
Yes. Oh, I have to press the button. I have to press the button. Yes. Does that ding mean I bought it?
Look at your Amazon app now. Plus, what did it show for underwear? That's what I want to see. Did it put in sample underwear?
Well, the last time, did it test
the underwear you
last
wanted.
Last time I did this, it said it bought me some emergency underwear. I'm not kidding.
Emergency underwear comes in handy.
Well, I now have a. It's just grab and go. Emergency underpants dispenser, and I. But it's actually a great gag just to have around, so I just leave it lying around. But yeah, they bought me that by accident. So there's other kinds you can get instant.
Wait. Scroll down. Instant underpants.
Yeah,
what's that?
Just add water.
Is it like a washcloth? One of those like instant wash? Oh yeah. Okay.
These underpants are conveniently compressed into a compact pellet. Just
well,
so
if you add water, you can't wear underwear? Them. They're wet.
It says, remember, it's better to have damp underpants than no underpants at all. Oh, here's the bad news right at the bottom. Fine print. Fits most children and small adults. I am not a small adult, so I guess this is just not.
You're SOL.
By the way,
one.
Frequently bought together, Archie McPhee instant underpants, just add water, accoutrements yodeling pickle, and a bag of unicorn fart cotton candy.
I sent my friend a yodeling pickle. It was awesome.
What is a yodeling pickle?
Oh, have you never seen this?
You have to have one, Leo.
You press the button and it yodels? This is exactly... Look at it. It even looks like the Amazon wand.
It does.
I think this is clearly... This
it's
is
the
clearly
Flintstones version.
The inspiration. Look at this, Carson. Show my screen. I mean, show the over-the-shoulder shot. I think this is clearly the inspiration for the wand. Amazon, Jeff must have said, you know that yodeling pickle really sells well. Let's make a yodeling pickle Echo.
But the Echo doesn't. Oh, ask her to yodel. Let's see if she'll yodel for you.
Yodel.
You may have to say,
Alex. You just bought a bunch
of yodels. I bought some yodeling pickles. Beatbox.
You may have to say her name.
I have to press a button and say her name?
Well, I don't know.
That's annoying.
Because you might be adding that to the shop. It might Beat think of box. That as a shopping request.
Do you press and hold?
I pressed and holded. Held.
yodel. This is... Throw this.
There's I'm one button.
A yodeling pickle. About the yodeling pickle button. Oh, Lord. Hours of mindless entertainment.
It makes a great gag gift. I'm just very emphatic about my yodeling pickle.
I think it'd be good for like one of those white elephant parties.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I may have purchased it for that too.
Yes, those are very useful for that. Okay, I should read the manual. Things to try. To add an item to your cart, say dark roast coffee or scan the item's barcode. To buy now, say buy and the thing. To track your order. Oh, here, let's try this. Where's my stuff?
A shipment for Leo's order, placed yesterday, should arrive tomorrow.
What's in it? A yodeling pickle. How many tablespoons? So you can do all the normal things. Are in a stick of butter. How many calories are in an apple? You could do the dim hue lights thing, calendar, sports.
Now, this were Google, you would point to the Denim or Stew, and you'd say, how many calories are in that?
I know. They could really do much better. This is promising start, but they really need to do more with this, I think.
It's a yes.
That was your reaction, too.
Yes, although... For controlling smart home stuff, I could put this in my guest room, for example.
Oh, there you go.
Without spending a lot of money, because
it's cheap.
It won't play music for people, but they could be like...
It's only $20, we should point out. This is the least expensive Echo you can buy. Actually, if this did more like controlled the TV, this could be a great remote control. There's all sorts of things this could do if they would add some features to it.
But then it wouldn't cost $20.
I mean, $20, that's great.
I know, but if they added features, it probably wouldn't cost $20.
Not necessarily. I mean, they just add Echo features to it. You know, they just design. They This was somebody said this, and I think this is kind of true, that maybe both this and the show were rushed a little bit.
For instance,
if you use the Echo app on Android, it's terrible for setting up the show. It looks like it has all the back end, but nobody did front end design on it. But on the iPhone, it looks fine. Looks good. Things like that. It's like it feels like they just kind of had to rush it out the door. What else should we talk about?
Oh, well, I think we need to talk about the Brits.
The Brits. Are you talking about NHS?
Yep.
And DeepMind?
And DeepMind.
Yep.
So it is illegal. It's illegal. Google has a partnership with the National Health Service in the UK, and it is illegal, according today. So here it is. 1.6 million patient records were shared with Google in an attempt to use AI to predict which patients would be at risk from kidney damage. It was the ICO, which is the Information Commissioner's Office, the UK privacy body, has ruled that it was illegal. Today, my office, this is the quote, today my office has announced that the Royal Free NHS Foundation Trust did not comply with the Data Protection Act when it turned over the sensitive medical data of around 1.6 million patients. Was it anonymized information or no?
Yeah, of course it was. But here you go, the next two paragraphs down. The law says that patients are implied to have consented to data being shared for the purposes of their direct care. But as the aim here was to develop an app that would help future patients, no consent could be assumed. Isn't that just ludicrous? Now, in some small fairness, they said that there are ways they could have done it to protect privacy and so on. But it just shows the priority. The techno panic beats helping people.
Well, hold on. What if it shows that, hey, we're doing totally new stuff. Let's have a conversation about that.
Yeah, which I kind of agree with you.
We kind of talked about this last week. Was it last week? With, you know, regulation in this era. We're doing a lot of crazy stuff. To say, hey, let's just talk through this for a little bit
IRB. Sure they did. No, I think they did, and they did an effort to do this in a way that passed the law, and then the NHS comes back, and it was the NHS, not Google, that was found to be at fault here. But it shows the priority that we have. You put privacy over lives. That's where we are right now, and this is dangerous. This is highly dangerous because it's insane that we've got to control knowledge.
So privacy can also affect lives. I don't think they're saying that privacy is better than saving people's lives. They're saying privacy has a cost that can ruin people's lives. And I don't think that's wrong.
But there's no privacy. No, this is about consent. This is not about privacy. Well, this is about consent.
But wait a minute. You might be making it more global than it really is. It might legitimately, first of all, we know that anonymization is not very effective, right? And so I think it's not unreasonable for the ICO to say, as you did it, it's not legal because those records privatized, anonymized may not be truly anonymous. You need permission to do this particular. What it was you need permission to do this particular data sharing. I agree. They probably shouldn't have brought up this future versus existing patient thing.
That's what it is. That's what they did.
But they're trying to, but their job is to protect privacy.
But doctors' jobs is to protect lives and to save lives. And if this time it's kidney damage, it could be other things that are highly fatal. And so this was a use that could not have been anticipated. The DeepMind existed and AI could help predict kidney disease.
But what if Stacey's
predicted that. So you're saying to all the past patients and all the past doctors and all the past bureaucrats, should have thought of that. Sorry you didn't. So we can't use that.
Well, no, but
we'll just let some people get kidney disease
as a
result.
Let's have the discussion is what Stacey's saying. We can go back to the table and have that discussion and ask for permission.
No, those are patients from the past. You can't go back and ask them for permission. It's over. So you've lost that data now. Okay. And you said to people, you better go ahead, get kidney disease.
So
a legal fine point wasn't done here for a use that couldn't have been anticipated. This is the problem I have with the regulatory reflex, especially in Europe, where they think they know what the internet is. They think they know what technology can do, and they want to constantly limit it to the past rather than anticipate the future and what can happen. And is there some risk? Yeah, but the risk to me is clearly greater that people will get, well, not, now could get diseases that could have been prevented and treated. That is horrendous as the prioritization we're putting on society because of this techno panic.
To be fair, we don't know that this would actually save lives.
Yeah,
we're assuming that it will.
Stacey, so make it breast cancer.
I understand, but we're not sure, A, if we take this data, and I'm just kind of following down your argument's path, not necessarily where I'm thinking
we're
this goes.
We're going to save lives, prevent disease, make disease
and so it makes diagnosing diseases easier.
That's a
and
good thing.
Recognizing yes, it is.
Thing.
But so, when you do that using AI, hold on, Jeff, hold on. When you do that with AI, you're going to have to test that. And you're going to have to do peer-reviewed studies to make sure the AI is actually doing it correctly and finding what you want it to find as opposed to what it thinks it you want to find. And we can bring up many examples of all of that. So you're rushing to saving lives, but there's still time to get consent on data and still do this because it's going to be a long process before lives are saved.
And one life. Problem I have with this aggregation of data thing is that the fight goes on about whether women should be, when and how women should be tested for breast cancer, when and how men should be tested for prostate cancer. And the problem is that that's a discussion held in aggregate. And well, the percentages don't go up much, but in that delta, if there's even one life that's affected, we have set the priority. And the priority here is that we're going to prioritize techno panic over data is a bad thing. Over helping people's health. And the greater picture here is we've said knowledge is dangerous. The greater knowledge is here is how to better diagnose people's ailments. The sacrifice of some small risk here, which is not even defined, is to my mind, well frigging worth it. And we've said, and techno panic has won the day. And it's won the day not only over health, but over knowledge, over the value of knowledge. And I find that horrendously offensive in a modern world. Sorry.
I think that consent to get someone's information is far more important than the pursuit of knowledge. Because if we give that up, we have so much information that could be mined at any point in time then. And I understand the
argument.
Okay, but also for things that might not be beneficial.
So you're going to cut off all the good possibilities because of bad things that
could happen. No, we're not going to cut it off, Jeff. We're going to have conversations about it.
But in that time when you have the conversation, somebody's life is affected. Somebody's mother, somebody's father, somebody's uncle is affected by that kidney disease, and the conversation can go on forever. The priority.
Somebody is always going to get hurt. Someone will always get hurt.
Which is the greater harm? Which is the greater harm? That someone gets a disease they may not have to have versus somebody's data sits in a repository they didn't give consent to.
What if the 20 million people whose data is in there gets reversed? They get doxxed and it gets hacked. Their lives are irrevocably changed by their data getting out there.
Because they found out about where their kidneys.
Well, we don't know. I mean, you have the right to have that be private, whatever you might say.
I'm not sure you should. I'm not sure you should. I think the thing we've got to solve in society.
Whoa.
Let me finish. The thing we've got to solve in society is about the bad use of data. The problem here, and I wrote a book about this, which I haven't sent you yet, which I need to. The problem here is that we still have a stigma around illness and disease. That's a larger problem in society. The fact that someone has, we have a problem that bad insurance companies and bad countries want to pull insurance from you because you have a disease. That's the problem. The fact that you have the disease and the fact that there's information about it is not the problem. The use of that data, the use of that information is where the problem lies.
Well, and you do have a point that much of that information could be useful in preventing future disease. And
I was part of a world.
Wouldn't you want to know if the BRCA, I've been told you don't pronounce that BRCA, you pronounce it BARCA.
BRCA.
Yeah. Well, BRCA. It's BRCA. You can pronounce it any way you want. I pronounce it BRCA, but apparently that's probably not the best pronunciation. But if that gene, if you had more information about how much that indicates a likelihood of breast cancer via statistical analysis of past information, I think that would be valuable.
So actually, your doctor tells you when you go in for your annual, your doctor asks you a series of questions to see if you should be tested,
right,
based on the utility of whether or not you'd even have it and then what you'd be able to do about it.
Right.
So there is a lot to unpack here.
That would give the doctor more information, though, right? He or she would now have a big statistical database that would say, well, you know, actually, after analysis, we found that the presence of that gene only impacts you 20%. And based on these other things, maybe you shouldn't do anything about it. But right now, they don't have that kind of
what's missing. Have that data on BRCA.
They have some of it. But, but it could be other kidney disease might be a similar problem.
So, but there. Okay. I think I understand your point, Jeff. And I am a big proponent of greater knowledge and sharing data and using it in these things. But I do think for reasons of privacy and how people's lives have changed, and also, too, for getting this sort of consent in the future, we should do it right. And we should inspire patients. I know that people are going to die. Jeff, people are always dying.
That's a great price. That's a huge.
It is a huge price, Stacey.
So 100 years from now, you look back and as anthropologists, you judge the priorities of a society. And you say that there was a choice held in this year, 2017, between taking data that didn't have the right, you know, tick box next to the consent because we didn't even think to ask because we had no idea technology would advance and we could do these amazing things. There's a choice between taking that data to have an impact on people's lives and not doing it because of protectionism around that data. I think that shows a skewed societal prioritization. I think that's unethical prioritization.
Maybe that's because you don't worry as much what happens when your data is leaked. Maybe you're not in a population that has to think or be worried about that pays more for, I don't know, insurance or, I mean,
I pay a lot for insurance because I have these pre-existing conditions.
So that is a for example, Jeff. That's for example. And this feels like an argument I have with a lot of people who are very pro-tech, who are like, why doesn't everyone want to give this information or share this information? And if you're coming at it from a different perspective, maybe it becomes more clear. And I'm just saying you're part of a very...
This isn't a tech perspective, Stacey. Stacey, this isn't a tech perspective. This is the perspective of somebody who has two cancers. If there's more knowledge that could have prevented my prostate from being taken because they know more about it, I'm all for that. And I understand the point. I understand the point about vulnerability and privacy. I get that fully. But I do think that we've got to get our act together as a society. And rather than going constantly to protectionism, we've got to grab these new opportunities that are provided. And it's not about technology, it's about information.
So going forward, I'm sure the NHS will add a clause that says
we lose huge amounts of data.
I understand, but they didn't ask in that case.
Because we couldn't know it. And this is not an idle conversation.
No, I know. Get people. So Google, instead of grabbing NHS, which granted would have been easier, now they should go out and advocate and advertise and have people donate their data. That's another way of doing it.
Years and years forward to do that. There is tons of historical data that today could save lives. Today.
I understand. So can you pull data from dead people? And I have no idea.
Well, let me tell you about that. I'll tell you exactly about that. Because I was just at the funeral home on Monday with my mother's death certificates. And a new wrinkle here I found out since the last time had to go through this in my family is that we needed to get two sets of death certificates. We needed to get one that has no cause of death because HIPAA requires that banks and such receive a death certificate without cause of death. They're not allowed to have it.
Wow.
So even in death, yes, your privacy is protected. In a way that's ridiculous.
By the way, condolences. I apologize for not saying this up front.
Oh, no, I wasn't trying to go for that. Yeah. Thank you. But HIPAA. No, thank you very much. Appreciate that. But I'm not trying to go, you know, milk for that. HIPAA has gone to ridiculous extremes in a way. So I was part of a World Economic Forum group about privacy, and there was a great discussion there. And you had major people in the health field, doctors and hospitals and universities, talking about what they lose by this overprotection of privacy. That discussion's being held. It's being held in real terms. And as far as I'm concerned, the right side just lost one. That's all I'm saying.
I'm right in the middle of this. I recognize both arguments. Right. And I think because it's health data, it's particularly charged. Is it extra charged because it's Google? Had it been Watson, for instance, you think the same ruling? Probably, right?
Yeah, probably.
So it's not that it's Google, although that adds to the fear that somehow DeepMind
might... Well, it's pointed out that Google did nothing wrong. The NHS was the one who was
there. Yeah, okay.
Though Google will still suffer.
Yeah, well, also some Google's concern
and
that
and
maybe...
The Guardian went after this whole thing. Like the Guardians, which has become my beloved Guardian, has become so anti-tech. So every time it's now reflexive that every time they can go against technology, they will. And so in this one, too, it's, well, we give too much data to Google. Well, you weren't giving it to Google. You were giving it to the NHS for good reasons, but to treat you. But anyway. Sorry, I just.
Good talk, Jeff. High five.
Yes.
Yeah, and going forward, of course, they should ask you if it'd be okay to share your data, anonymized data with. But that's going forward. I understand, Jeff, it's not going to save lives today.
Jeff, did you read Henrietta Lacks? What's the book called? Something Life of.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It is sort of related here, but you know, just
with the physical thing as opposed to the.
I understand.
Original thing.
You know, yes. It's just perspective and historical use of data / physical thing. Anyway.
It's the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks. Her gene, which is scientists know as HELA or HeLa, she died of cancer in 1951, and her gene cells were taken without her knowledge at that time.
Which is a form of data. You're right. Her gene is a form of data.
And they've been bought and sold by the billions. I think this one's more about that she was ripped off than that her privacy. Basically. That her privacy was impinged upon.
But this is a consent issue because they actually didn't they used her was it her ovaries? I can't remember. Her cervix cells? They used those and cultivated them without her permission or consent.
Yeah.
So
it's been used to develop the polio vaccine for cloning, gene mapping, in vitro fertilization. Her cells, the HeLa cells, are widely used and very valuable. Now, the question is, I mean, they didn't have any value to her. I don't know. That's a really
that is
fascinating.
And they clearly had great value to a great many people.
Poor. Her family remains poor, and and that's you know an issue because I don't know and was money made with her cells? I don't know.
Yes,
but they were sold, huh?
I believe yes.
Yeah,
it's been like 2-3 years since I've read the book.
Yeah,
but totally an awesome book. Everyone should read
it. Certainly, it raises some very interesting ethical issues, somewhat similar to what we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. Although. As an individual, well, see, these were all individuals whose data was borrowed by the NHS. There's also the issue of what rights you've given up by being a part of the National Health Service and so forth and so on. And the ICO's job is to protect you despite that. The NHS clearly felt like, no, we own this information.
So let's say that you get the plague. But there were just two cases of the plague
reported. I know.
Reported,
fortunately, it's highly treatable in this era. Thank God.
Thank goodness. But let's say you get the plague and you say, no, I don't want anybody to know that. Nobody should know. That's private. And you risk other people getting the plague.
Right.
Right.
That's public health information. I agree with you. That's a good point.
That's public health information.
In fact, when polio strikes or malaria or any communicable disease, that information goes right to the CDC. It's anonymized also, but it goes to the CDC.
If you have certain strains of tuberculosis, actually, you are. But there are laws written about this. Your data is actually shared.
Right.
But we wrote laws about that. So people had these conversations, not companies and the NHS, but lawmakers and presumably medical advocates and other people. So I see your point, and I am not one to be like, yes, let people die. But I'm also a big proponent of privacy, and I'm not willing to give it up without.
Chat room says, if you show up at work with a cold, is it your obligation to tell your coworkers? Or yeah, let's say something without symptoms that's even more deadly, Ebola. Right? I mean,
if you have Ebola, you should tell people.
You should tell people. I think you're right.
You should actually go. You might actually
What about more to the point and timely, if you have AIDS?
You have to tell your partners. There's laws about that. Yeah. You can't be a, what are they called?
Carrier?
There's a word.
Patient zero.
There is a word.
There's a word for someone who... Yeah, but yes, but there are laws about not infecting your partners with it. If you infect someone with AIDS and you knew you had AIDS.
What do you bet because that was at the time the gay cancer that law got passed really fast?
Yeah.
Part of the problem is, and Jeff, I understand this is what rankles you most, that there's a real mismatch between how society decides this stuff and implements it and the speed with which technology advances. And you're in favor of the technology just advancing, and Stacey's saying, but there needs to be a discussion about this.
I agree with Stacey, but I'm also saying
data.
That it's. But I'm saying at some point. You're right, Stacey. It's government data. The privacy is important. I agree with all that. But I'm saying at some point you choose to. I would say we as a society should choose to violate the lack of consent of people in the past who wouldn't have known better. I think at some point, if you said to Henrietta Lacks, okay, we're going to try not to rip you off here, but you know, if we take these genes from you after you're gone, you could save countless, countless people. I bet Henrietta Lacks was a wonderful woman who would have said, well, of course. Of course.
Yeah, most of the upset about Hila is about the fact that she wasn't compensated.
Right.
Not about privacy.
Well, and she did not get consent for her cells. And they talk about how uncomfortable it makes, I think it made her or it made her children that parts of their mother in their, and again, scientifically, this is not accurate, but they felt like parts of their mother were like floating around in labs everywhere.
Right.
Which,
of course, it's not. It's cells cultured from her cervical cells.
But no one explained that to them.
Yeah.
And that's why the second point. So privacy is important. But two, if you don't get consent and explain and educate people about this stuff, all kinds of weird crap and beliefs are going to like blow up around this. And so
let's say that we find a lab that has 100-year-old hair samples, and we find that using that data, you know, gets us something. We have to go. We can't go back 100 years, but we
those
find
people
a new
are all
method.
Dead, and that's anonymized.
Well,
I mean, 100-year-olds.
No, it's not anonymized at all.
Was the issue that some of the data that the National Health Service shared was live people?
No, it was the consent. It was the lack of the proper consent for that data.
So they didn't stipulate whether they were dead or alive. Some of them weren't.
Yeah, and again, because that wasn't anticipated that you could ever predict kidney disease.
Right.
Based on this data. So there was not a reason to ask. That's the problem I have with this kind of limiting the future by the knowledge of the past. Then we cut off tons. You know, this is not just, you know, a little bit of NHS recent data. And the World Economic Forum project, they were upset about having, you know, 50 years of data they couldn't get because of things like this that had these are the experts saying we can have real impact from this.
I think that Google, if it wants this data, it can go and get a pretty relevant subset of this type of data by talking to patients and asking them to donate, talking to doctors and having them talk to their patients. It's a more fragmented approach. It may be statistically not as awesome.
Which may lead to more false diagnoses.
Right. But Google...
Which has an impact on people's lives.
Yeah, but you're not going to get 1.6 million patient records that way.
And the cost of that would be extreme.
I'm just saying that there are ways around it. Just because in going forward, if that they can get consent. I mean, you're basically saying, I want it now. And I don't like the rules that were in place when I got this stuff. And now I want them changed because we can do more with them. That's not wrong. But what the courts are saying is we're not going to retroactively change the rules in this situation just because someone wants it now.
Reality changes.
And yes.
Reality changes.
I know. But
just out of curiosity, should we not have harvested and used those HeLa cells?
Are you asking me or both of us?
I mean, there was huge benefit from them.
No, we did. And if I were the doctor, I mean, ideally we would have gotten consent.
Right.
We didn't.
But she was dead.
No, when they harvested them, they knew about them beforehand. They knew her.
Well, they biopsied cells. Her cancerous cervix and those cells that they had harvested.
But she was still alive. Like some of
she was still alive, obviously. But I don't know if they knew the value of those cells. They just, because they were cancerous, continued to reproduce. And maybe later, after she was dead, they said these are valuable. They got her consent probably to harvest them in the first place.
No, they didn't. That was part of the...
It's part of the treatment. She got a biopsy, right? I mean... Okay.
I don't know. Like, this is, I'm like, should they have not done this? I don't remember the facts.
There's a question
of the
greater good. Right? Did they do it wrong? Yes. But is there a greater good? I think there clearly is.
She wasn't harmed. This was part of her cancer treatment. So,
right.
She wasn't harmed.
She wasn't harmed. In fact, you could argue that this was with an intent to help her. It was later discovered the value of these cells. It would have been nice, of course, to compensate her and her estate for the billions of dollars it's generated or whatever it is. Maybe it's $1 million. I don't know. But there is clear benefit to society from having done this. No harm to her.
And
I don't know if a court would say there's a problem. In fact, a court
would probably say they should compensate her in this case or compensate her.
There was
her
no
heirs.
Harm. So the interesting thing is...
You know, even then, we all donate data to things. So Foursquare makes money on knowing that I've gone into that McDonald's and not that McDonald's.
But they have that knowledge.
I did voluntarily give it, but yeah. I didn't know that they were going to make money in a whole new
That's
model.
That's true. They found a new model.
And I'm of course, fine with that. Knowledge, this is the problem we get down to in the end of saying, can you own knowledge?
Yeah.
And in a free society, in an advanced and modern society, the answer is no, you can't own it because you can't tell other people what they're not allowed to know. And in the end, it's about knowledge.
Okay, there is a very big difference between knowledge and data.
Oh,
data
that's interesting.
Data begets knowledge.
And data is necessary to knowledge. Data is information.
Yes.
You can't
Data is a precursor to knowledge, let's say that.
You
right.
can't own information.
Okay,
you can own the treatment of it, but you can't own information. That is the essence of copyright. You can only own the treatment of information, not the information itself.
That's facts, but... facts about an individual in person, like that's different from data about like their genetic history and that sort of thing. Unless we create a series of laws that protect people from the negative outcomes that come from having
that's what I argued in my book. Exactly. We need to do that. I agree with that. We absolutely need to do that. And we need
to
stop.
So absent that, there are no protections. There are no protections if your data.
But
I mean,
we're going to
move.
Harm?
Okay, I think we're going to move on because I think both points have been well made. It's a fascinating question, and I don't know if there's a clear answer to it. And the reason I mentioned harm is because that's often the measure the standard courts use for awards in lawsuits. And it comes up in a recent lawsuit, Facebook was being sued in the U.S. over user tracking. When even after you're logged out of Facebook, they would continue to track your internet activity. And there was a suit saying that Facebook had violated federal and California privacy and wiretapping laws by storing cookies on their browsers that tracked when they visited outside websites containing Facebook like buttons. The judge, Edward Davila in San Jose, district court judge, threw it out. He said, nope, you don't have you failed to show that you, A, had a reasonable expectation of privacy, and more importantly, B, that you suffered any realistic economic harm or loss. In other words, the abstract notion that it was harmful wasn't sufficient for the judge to let the case move forward. You had to show actual harm. And I think a lot of these privacy issues are not, it's difficult to show actual harm. It's more potential or putative harm.
Right. Or it's the creepy line, or it's the what could happen. That's what I argued in the book. Actual harm is the proper standard. And even when there is actual harm, the solution to that is not necessarily withholding the information or the data. It is how it is almost always how the data is used.
And yet, I bet a lot of people are upset over this decision and feel like the judge protected Facebook. And you know, a lot of the stories have said Facebook allowed to continue to track you even after you're logged out.
Well, okay, so here's something that. And normally I'm pro in the harm category in the sense that you should have to show harm, except this privacy there. And there's been some really well argued things. And I wish I were as erudite as the judges who wrote their dissents here. But privacy is the ability to like be your own person in a space and not be judged. And the question is, even if there's no harm, is the fact that that information is known and there's some judgment being made, is that a problem? And that is a real question. And that's where some of the privacy things about, you know, oh gosh, my brain just stopped working. I'm sorry, you guys.
You're too young for that, Stacey.
I'm so tired. I blame the migraine medicine.
You can't use that excuse every week, Stacey.
It's Topamax. It makes you stupid. It is what it does.
Oh, can I get some?
It makes you skinny and stupid. I call skinny it
skinny and stupid.
Drug.
Oh man, that's nice. Well, you know that's how LSD was invented. They were playing with rye molds, ergot, which is used as a migraine medicine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Albert Hoffman was trying to synthesize migraine medicine and accidentally synthesized LSD and took the first acid trip. What was that? I think John will know this. Was this back in 1945, I want to say? It was in the 40s. It's a long time ago. Took a very famous bicycle ride. He accidentally touched some of it and got some of it in his mouth, got on his bicycle to go home and started tripping. And all of that to keep you from getting headaches.
There we go. Well, thanks, man.
Anyway, I'm sorry that you're a little spacey, Stacey.
I will be for like a month, then I'll come back.
We got a new name for it, Stupamax.
Stupamax. Oh, there you go.
So you're just, it's a month-long treatment, and then you don't have to do it anymore?
No, it's forever. Well, it's as long as I can tolerate it, and then I stop. I go off and on because it makes me lose my hair, too. I guess it's not the supermodel drug.
It's a no, but it, no, I know it because it's an anti-seizure medicine too, and
it is.
Yeah, yeah. So. And in fact, the people I know who've been on it hate it.
Yeah.
Hate it because it makes you kind of slow.
Have you tried everything? I assume.
Oh, Jeff, I have tried everything with the exception of LSD.
Yeah. I think you should try it.
There.
I've heard some good reports, and I want to say
Texas?
I've never had a migraine.
We want to do the show. Well, we want to do the show with Stacey when she takes it.
Like, I'm usually not as bad. But I'm struggling over this. Who wrote this? Awesome. It was an awesome essay on the harms of a lack of privacy that are just like self-censoring is the closest I can get to it. I was trying to look it up, but I can't remember who wrote it. So,
well, yeah. I mean, so yeah, that makes sense. So. In fact, it would have the opposite effect to the beneficial effect Jeff talks about, which is if you can't be assured that you control your data, you might be more reluctant to share valuable data, as Jeff often does about his medical condition and his life condition. And that is a valuable thing to share that. But if you can't be assured that it's going to be, you know, that you control where it goes. But I think Jeff's point is well taken, which is we don't need laws to protect privacy. We need laws to protect the misuse of that information, that there is value in the sharing of information. And
we need laws on privacy, but the primary way to do that is to protect against. So Dana Boyd's great example of this, when she sat me down and taught me about this, she said, listen, Jeff, you come in and apply for a job. I can see by the color of your hair how old you are. I can guess all kinds of other things about you. I have the knowledge that you're an old fart. And I can use that to not give you the job. And I'll get away with that. And that's the way life goes. But if I do that 10 times in a row and you all get together and you share that knowledge that I've done that, then there are laws and you can get after me because of the use of that knowledge. You can't stop Dana from knowing that I'm an old fart. That's apparent. What you do with that knowledge and the pattern with which you do that is a different matter. And that's where we legislate the use of the knowledge rather than the knowledge itself.
Boyd actually wrote, often privacy isn't about hiding. It's about creating space to open up.
Oh, yes. Look, there it is.
Yes.
Oh, is that what you were looking for?
Maybe.
I didn't take any Topamax. This is a article about in an ethics blog, Loss of Online Privacy, What's the Harm? From the Markle Center for Applied Ethics at the University of Santa Clara.
I keep scrolling when you show this on your screen. I'm like,
I know.
Yes,
that's it. That's it. They quote, and I love this at the beginning, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, all human beings have three lives, public, private, and secret. This is actually a really good article that does address a lot of the things we've been talking about. Privacy is about much broader. This is Jay Stanley, a senior policy analyst for the ACLU. Privacy is about much broader values than just hiding things. Ultimately, the fullest retort to the I thought it might be. I'm channeling you. That's because I've taken a lot of acid. Ultimately, the fullest retort to the nothing to hide impulse is a richer philosophical defense of privacy that articulates its importance to human life, the human need for a refuge from the eye of a community. And from the self-monitoring that living with others entails, the need for space in which to play and try out new ideas, identities, and behaviors without lasting consequences, and the importance of maintaining the balance of power between individuals and the state. And I would actually underscore that last one, because I think that's, for a lot of people who watch this show, the kind of the critical point of all this is maintaining the balance of power between individuals and the state.
Yeah, and I have long argued that the state presents itself as the protector of privacy. It is the worst threat to privacy.
It is.
Because it can use that data in ways that no one else can.
Yeah.
And this is also why I think, like, I am very against spying on, like, my daughter, because I think people need that space test things out and grow.
Yes. That's why you shouldn't read a kid's diary unless, and there are some... There are some mitigating circumstances. If you're afraid that they're doing something really dangerous and you need to protect them, you know, there are some mitigating circumstances, but kind of generally invading their privacy is not a good thing. Everybody needs a private place.
Well, so then the question is, without getting consent, and I can't tell in this Facebook case if the issue, I know he said it was harm, but if people thought they were exiting Facebook, thus making their activity on the web, quote unquote, private, then does that mean then there is kind of a harm from it?
Except, Stacey.
Okay.
But here's the but. Your ISP knows everywhere you've gone, so it's not private to that extent.
Somebody else knows too. Yes. And this is an issue of education among people, because I know that when I log out of Facebook, Facebook is tracking me. I know that if I actually turn on certain apps in stores, their beacons are sharing my physical proximity data and interest in certain products with Facebook and Google because of retargeting via beacons, which is freaking crazy. So, but
you are in a public place.
The issue is, am I aware as an individual that this is all being shared? And I think
but
that's not a conversation we have a lot of. And people don't know what they're sharing.
Oh,
and
we're having it like
we have it here all the time.
Yeah. I know, but
it's one of the few places. I agree with you. Yeah.
It's like, you know, somebody walking around with, like, I don't know, their fly unzipped. We're all walking around with our flies unzipped and we're not aware
I've
of
done
it.
That.
And, you know, maybe you later know someone decides that it's a problem.
People respect my privacy and don't tell me. I'd rather they tell me.
Did you see the story about the Ticketmaster app that uses supersonic sound? So there's a new Ticketmaster is offering a new way to authenticate at the gate when you buy a concert ticket. You put their app on the phone, and the app emits tones at 19. I think it's 19.5 kilohertz.
Oh God, are you going to play loud tones?
No,
again?
I won't. But you probably are young enough that you could hear this. I am not, and most people are not. Very small percentage of people, mostly young ears, can hear it. But there's an additional feature to this app, because if you've installed this app, which you have to get into the concert, it will continue to beacon your location easily and inexpensively to receivers all over the venue, so that Ticketmaster can track how much time do they spend at the beer counter, how much time do they spend in the mosh pit, how much time do they spend at their seat, that kind of thing. Now, I'm sure somewhere in the 15 pages printed in tiny, tiny print on the back of your ticket, Ticketmaster tells you that.
But you can't get in without it?
I think you need to have that to get in. I think that's
so. Then
the
you would have to get in and then delete the app if you wanted to preserve your privacy.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I
that
bet
is
you could print out a ticket still.
It's on the ticket, I'm sure, but it's in such fine print. So that's another thing. There's disclosure, and then there's actual disclosure.
Right. Well, in Europe, at least. Hold on. I feel like I just saw a story about this morning. I'm pulling it up. Okay, here we go.
This was an article in VentureBeat, I think today, by the way, about this Ticketmaster.
Okay, so this is from, remember how I told you about my friend David, who started this Connected Rights newsletter? He was writing about this Facebook case, I think. But he said consumer watchdogs in Germany and Norway have recently been getting active in suing tech firms over lengthy, impenetrable terms and conditions that make people sign away their privacy without being super clear about what will happen to their data. So it sounds like we need some of that action here.
Yeah.
I actually had a class action lawyer a while back on my show who talked about terms and conditions and privacy rights. And the challenge is to do a class action suit, which is one of the few ways to get people to pay attention to this. You have to prove harm. So without harm, which is the case that we're talking about, possibly what we're talking about with the Facebook thing, they don't really have a case. Now, a state attorney general, though, could come and sue on behalf of a population.
Right.
Without So that may be the future. I don't know. I mean, this is where our legal system isn't quite set up for what we're trying to make do with, I guess. That was
the company that Ticketmaster uses is Lisnr, LISNR. And apparently does this for other companies. Land Rover uses it to have their cars communicate. Here's the exciting video that Ticketmaster created to share how wonderful this new Lisnr technology is going to be. Oh, it's unfortunately doesn't. It's all music. There's text. The Ticket, an innovation that hasn't changed in 30 years, but it's about to. 2 years ago, Ticketmaster set out to reimagine how a ticket could personalize the experience according to the identity of the fan. By the way, you can't pirate these tickets, and it makes it hard to sell it in anything but an approved venue, yep, which I think has a little bit to do with this as well. So replacing the paper ticket with sound. So
I wonder how easily you can hack it.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be.
Yeah.
I mean, because like if it's just a frequency, isn't right. it easy to replicate? I guess it's frequencies
it's a,
in
it's
a several
code
tones.
In that frequency.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you copy the code. Ticketmaster says the rollout has already begun in some venues. It will take around 4 years to complete the process globally. And if you're a Ticketmaster user, that there may be more going on. If you walk up to the door and it says, "Oh, hi, Leo, we've been waiting for you. Your seat is ready," then you know you've got this new technology built in. Each smart tone carries its unique identifier, meaning venues can install smart tone scanners around a space to track gig goers as they move around. This not only arms venues with a vast swath of geolocation data, it lets them target individuals with tailored messages and, quote, deeply personalized experiences.
AKA ads.
Yeah. Deeply personalized experience. Ticket.
I see you've been in the bathroom for 30 minutes. Yes. Maybe you should lay off the hot dogs.
This is what EVP of Product at Ticketmaster says. This means using identity to drive customized experiences based on who you are, where you are, eliminating fraud, resulting in a safer environment, and delivering more personalization based on the specific event you're attending. I'm going to bet this doesn't mean the band's going to play more of your requests. Wow. So you're going to see more of this shopping malls, shoppers. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting idea. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to use Bluetooth or beaconing. You can just do it. We know this already, that TVs speak sometimes to your app, right?
Yes.
Why is this better than a barcode?
It doesn't require the user to interact or even know about it.
You just walk through the door?
That's why.
And if it's a connected door, it'll shut in your face.
I think Google has something called Nearby that's similar. Google's trying stuff like this all the time. For a while, you could pay at a McDonald's near Google by just smiling. And it would recognize you and say, oh, yes, we'll take that out of your account right now.
Huh, you're right. Whatever happened to this?
You remember that?
Hey, I'm looking at it and I'm like, huh, this is cool.
Yeah.
I don't remember this at all.
It was only in Silicon Valley.
Oh.
So there's a little skills gap. Echo has mad skills. I guess if I change it and say, doesn't mean it didn't activate your you know who. 15,000 skills now on the Amazon Echo. Compare that to the number of skills the Google Assistant has, 378. Or Cortana has, 65. And you can see there's a fairly large skills app.
So let's do a little informal survey. How many skills do you have activated in your Echo app?
Is there a way to go look and see that?
Yeah. Well, I think let me see if it's only smart.
Because that's the big problem, isn't it? Is that people don't know the skills exist. It's hard to figure out what the skills are. It's kind of like the App Store problem. One of the things I like about the Echo Show, and it might be one of the reasons they created a screen, is the screen will tell you about skills as part of the rotator. It tells you things you can do. And says,
so you can go into your skills. If you go to skills, there's a button called your skills, and then you can see how many you have.
All right, let's go into skills. How many skills do you have, Stacy?
I'm counting 12.
Oh, you have to count them?
16.
My skills.
20. 24.
Okay, I
have 25.
I have for a fart, 60 dB, 7-minute workout. Which I have never used.
I've used it.
Not even for 7 minutes?
Not even once. Abra, which I think is the one where your Echo can give your smart home commands using spells from Harry Potter, I think. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I do remember. I saved that one.
Yeah, AccuWeather, Admirer. I can tell my admirer to make me smile. I don't know. Age Calculator. Things to try, ambient noise of several kinds, thunder, rain, and ocean. Anymote, I don't even know what that is. Oh, ask Anymote to play my Sonos. It's some sort of smart remote for Sonos. Earthquakes? God, I'm just in the A's. I'm not counting these.
Okay.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah, you apparently have a lot.
Well, I try everything. But most people probably have a handful. No,
yeah,
you go through your skills and delete skills you don't use.
I'm doing it right now.
Why? Here's a resistor decoder skill. So you get a resistor and you read it the colors, colored rings, and it'll tell you what kind of resistor it is. That's useful.
that's
a 43 ohm resistor there you got there. Petaluma Patch, NPR Story of the Day. A lot of these are flash briefing. Math puzzles, Magic 8 Ball.
Do you have Would You Rather? Oh, that might be my tip of the week.
I hate Would You Rather.
My God. My daughter loves it.
I hate that game.
Oh.
It's all hypotheticals, for one thing.
Oh, it's perfect. You're a radio show host. What are you talking about? We argued forever about hypotheticals.
That's a good point. It's my life. Hypotheticals are my life. Well, it's not hypothetical. 15,069 skills at last count. Nice. I thought the last thing I remember was 5,000. So it's just growing like Topsy. Oh,
yeah, they had 10,000, I think, in February.
Yeah.
And nobody's making still, money on those, right?
You can.
Only on the game developer ones. And it's unclear how that works. You have to apply and talk to the Amazon people.
Well, speaking of which, remember that Prime Day is coming, the third annual. And there will be Echo voice deals for Prime Day. So get ready. Prime Day is July 11th. It's a week
What's a voice deal? You can ask Echo.
God, I'm sorry. You can ask Echo, what are your deals? And then they will give you some. And then you could say, order that. That's dangerous. And voice shoppers will get access to special deals 2 hours before the main event begins at 6 p.m. Pacific on July 11th.
Did you buy anything in the last Prime Day?
I didn't. I really resist.
It's nothing there. Yeah.
I try to resist stuff like that because I feel like I'll buy things I don't need. Like, I never do that. Like, all of a sudden, 16 Yodel pickles will arrive.
That's happening, Leo. You don't realize it, but the Dash wand is like, oh, Yodel pickles for everyone.
Okay, but whatever you do, don't order the sugar-free gummy bears. Okay, I'm just saying.
Right. Noted.
And by the way, if you're not a Prime subscriber yet, this is a good time to become a subscriber to Prime. You get $20 off, $79 a year. If you enable, and you can do that with your Echo as well. So you just say, sign me up for Prime.
Oh, then it's like Prime cost what it cost when I first signed
up. Yeah, exactly. That's what
those used to be years ago.
Yep. And $10 credit for any orders purchased before July 10th if you've never used voice shopping before. So, wow. This is just, they're just going to take over the world, aren't they?
They are.
Yes.
They're just going to take, this is the deals with, they call it deals with the A word.
We have renamed her Madam A on our show.
Madam A. Good. Can we steal that?
You're welcome.
Once in a while, I plug Stacey on IoT.
You don't have to. I mean, you don't have to plug the show, but just it's a little easier because you want to have a person.
Yeah. I call it Echo. I don't think that's too hard to do, but it's a.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You have seen the Saturday Night Live Echo for Old People, haven't you?
Oh,
yes.
Love it.
Oh, that was so
great.
We played it
on the show. You mustn't have.
Oh, we did play it on the show. That's right. Yeah. It's just brilliant. Just brilliant.
I love it.
You know what would have made it more perfect is if you were in the commercial, Jeff. That would have been just awesome.
I'm not old. Now you're really.
I'm cruising.
You know that Jeff and I are pretty much the same age. You know that, right? So anything I say bad about Jeff bounces off him and sticks to me.
Well, that'll do until I get my Punch Leo button, I guess.
Get off my virtual porch.
So Bixby, the Bixby button, what a mess up this is. I have a dedicated button on my Samsung Galaxy S8 that not only doesn't do anything much now, it won't for the foreseeable future.
They're making a Bixby voice product for whom?
Well, that's for Korea. That's the problem. Bixby works fine in Korean. Bixby is the smart intelligence additional. Like, I need an extra on any Android phone, anything besides Google Assistant. Bixby is Samsung's version. Like, they do on all their, you know, they always do this. They add, you know, oh, it's not enough just to have Google Voice. You have to have Samsung Voice or Google Pay. You have to have Samsung Pay. The English version will be delayed again because it lacks enough big data to teach it to work. Nobody's using it. How are they going to? It was supposed to launch in April, then push to spring, then to June. They have a beta version out now. In fact, Florence Ion showed us on the new screensavers a couple of weeks ago. It's mostly, at least in its current incarnation in English, used to launch apps. And you can actually do things like crop pictures and stuff with your voice. So it doesn't really overlap that much with a Google Assistant. But it's just annoying that they put a physical button on there.
That does nothing. Maybe they can make it yodel.
That would make it a very expensive yodeling pickle.
Exactly.
And yeah, they're doing that a Bixby-powered smart speaker, but it would, as is, by the way, I think Baidu is doing one for China. In fact, they just released it. But these are for those markets. So the Korean Bixby does work. It's getting,
other
languages.
Okay, so the challenge is it doesn't speak English.
It's getting other languages, and so I presume the Bixby will be Korean only. I didn't know this happened. It just happened, I guess. The laptop ban on passengers flying Etihad, Emirates, and Turkish Airlines has now been lifted.
Oh. Yay.
Six other airlines still are subject to the ban.
Did they change their screening policies?
Yeah.
Okay.
I forget what they said when I read the story. I can't remember what they're doing.
So the ban, remember, was started in March, covering flights to U.S. destinations from 10 airports in the Middle East and on only Middle Eastern airlines of all electronic devices, including laptops, tablets, and e-readers. You couldn't bring your Kindle on either. The ban was obviously difficult to carry out. Individual boxing of every single electronic device traveling with a passenger at the gate, things like that. This article, TechCrunch doesn't say what changed.
I forget.
But that's good. Maybe they won't do the generalized laptop ban that they were talking about. The Afghanistan all... Here's a story that'll cheer you up. The all-girl robotics team, this is first, which is great, and for the first time ever, Afghanistan had fielded a first team. It was all women. They tried, six Afghan inventors trying to come to the U.S. for the first global challenge in D.C. mid-July. They couldn't get permission from the United States to interview for their visas. The girls risked a 500-mile trek cross-country to the American Embassy in Kabul. And that's a dangerous place. There have been a number of recent suicide attacks and a truck bomb.
Well, it's dangerous just to be a woman there. It's dangerous to be a woman who's interested in getting educated.
It's dangerous to travel 500 miles across the nation as a woman.
Yes.
And they did it not once, but twice.
Jeez.
But were denied the visa. So I think, though, that teams from Iraq, Iran, and Sudan were able to secure travel visas. Only Afghanistan, Team Afghanistan, and Team Gambia have been denied visas so far. It's kind of too bad.
Yeah. We're already seeing tourism down. What happens when we stop hosting events like this?
Because people can't get here. Yeah.
Because they can't travel here.
Yeah.
So I held a summit at CUNY right after the ban was announced. And there was the head of technology for one of the largest publisher in Scandinavia couldn't come because he was born in Iran.
Ugh, that's ridiculous.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
This is our world now. We make strangers the enemy, no matter who they are.
So I'm disappointed to say that Instagram is now cracking down on fake influencers. So that's going to really reduce my ability to sell health teas and makeup.
There goes my makeup blog.
Yep. Sorry.
Dang it.
Sorry, Stace.
I was worried. My van life blog.
What is a fake influencer? I would like to know.
What is a real influencer? I mean, really.
A Kardashian.
I'm like,
that's a real influencer. So
I got a name tag that called me an influencer, and I was like, I'm sorry. What? No, I'm a journalist.
Turns out there were sites like Instagress, Instaplus, and PeerBoost, which third-party sites which help you boost the number of followers, not for real, obviously, and that violates Instagram's guidelines. They were wannabe influencers use these types of services to automate generic comments and likes. You pay for the number of likes and comments you want, and a bot takes care of the rest. So brands, I guess, see all those likes and loves and comments and say, oh, this is an influencer. We ought to give her a free Bose speaker system or whatever it is.
There's huge ad agencies that do nothing but this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I search for influencer in my inbox, I bet I have a bunch of crazy emails.
So, you're an influencer, yeah. I bet. How many Instagram followers do you have?
I don't have an Instagram. I mean, I do have an Instagram, but I don't post anything on it. Yeah. I'm ancient. Like, you guys joke that you're old. I am.
You
like,
don't know old. We know old.
I'm
you
old don't know. And I'm not social. So it's terrible.
You may be cranky, but you're not old.
Good article last year in Bloomberg by Max Chafkin. He says, let me pause this auto start video. Confessions of an Instagram influencer. I used to post cat photos. Then a marketing agency made me a star. Oh, Lord.
Oh, that was a great story. I remember
this. I know. Remember this?
Yes.
So you can get $10,000 for one Instagram post. Of course, the FTC says now you have to really use hashtag ad right at the front and stuff like that. I don't know. Do you think that that diminishes the value because now people don't think you really like something? You're just doing
sure.
it because I think so.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of the problems. I mean, I remember when I was like probably in my teens reading a science fiction story where that predicted basically today, which was like this. The setting was a time when people would get credit for liking things like, oh, I love this scarf by so-and-so. And no one actually liked anything anymore. But
so I follow a good friend, iJustine, love her. She's definitely an influencer. And I was following her on Instagram and I saw this post. She's talking about, her amazing. Like, look at this TV. It's like a wallpaper on TV, and it really is cool. And then I read the post, and it said, this TV is so insane. Links in bio for unboxing and setup. Hashtag LGL OLED TV. Hashtag ad. And you're right. It kind of soured me on this. It's like, this isn't a real post. This is an ad in my Instagram feed. She got 79,000 views, and I bet you she got, besides getting the TV for free, she probably got some good money out of that. No, I love Justine, and more power to her. I don't have a problem doing that at all, because she's hashtag added and everything. But it does seem to me that the brand is getting a little bit less, because it's an ad.
Yeah. But it's made to, we talk about that in journalism all the time. The whole goal of advertisers right now is to provide something that looks as much like content as possible.
To trick you.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a lot of fun, and I am starving now, so I'm going to just go have this can of Dinty Moore hearty beef stew. This is everything you want in a can of stew and more.
I used to get, my mom fed me that.
I've never opened
that explains
can.
It is it nasty. All.
It's nasty.
You still haven't gotten over the agita, have you?
She was a working mom, so it's totally
no,
legit.
No, fine, and yeah.
Bless her for feeding me at all.
She fed you. That's she fulfilled her obligation right there. You're strong. You're healthy. You have migraines. That's probably why. But
that's it. I blame the Hamburger Helper and Dinty Moore beef stew.
Oh, I love Hamburger Helper. That's still a treat.
It is not good for you.
It's a guilty pleasure. Hey, I eat a lot of stuff that's not good for me. It's county fair time. Oh, exactly. I told Lisa, the only reason I go to the fair is for fair food. And I think, I don't know if she posted it, but there's a picture of me somewhere with a corn dog this big.
Wow. How do you feel about funnel cake?
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's a guy sells fudge there that's just amazing. And, it's talk about guilty pleasure. I feel terrible for it.
Al Franken put up a link to the Minnesota State Fair, and they've gone all fancy dancy with the State Fair food. It was amazing. The truffles and God knows
what. It's funny because Minnesota State Fair is, I think, where I first learned of the deep fried Oreo and Snickers and all of that. Yeah, it looks like Lisa never posted the picture of me in the giant hot dog.
It was a favor to you.
Thank you,
probably,
because it really would have been compromising. Is that what you like at the county, at the state fairs, Jeff, is corn dogs?
I used to when I was a kid.
They're so good.
Fulton County Fair in Fulton County, Illinois.
So good.
I do the turkey legs.
Oh yeah, the big Henry VIII turkey legs.
Oh geez.
Yes, and you have to make noise and wave it around like a drunken, angry big man.
It is basically a club made of meat.
Yeah.
Stacy, share something cool and neat that you just got with us. Let's get Stacy's pick.
So instead of a pick, I was actually going to revisit some of my old picks after they've lived in my life.
That's actually a good idea.
Tell you what I think, what's worth it and what's not.
Good.
So a couple weeks ago, I told you about the Levitan light switch that was Madam A enabled, and it's also Google Home enabled. After living with it, I've decided I do not like this light switch.
Uh-huh.
It is. So the Leviton, it's $50, Leviton Decora Wi-Fi light switch. I don't like the toggle mechanism, and I don't like the dimmer slider. I'm just not a fan.
So thumbs down on the Decora smart switch with Z-Wave Plus.
You were so excited about it when you got it.
But you liked that other one. What's that other one? You still like that one?
I love Lutron. In fact, I added more Lutrons to my house. There is one I'll post a video on it. Actually, I forgot that I have a video on it. But there's one that you can use without a neutral wire, but it's only on off. And I love it. So it's the...
That's the Cassetta?
It's the Cassetta, but it's the P... Hold on. X, no, 5X. There's a lot of weird...
So it doesn't have a dimmer. It's just on or off.
It's just on or off, but you can use it to make your... lights, what's the word I'm looking for? 5W.
Smart.
Yes.
No, I would like that because a lot of this lights now I use are LEDs and I don't, even if they're dimmable, I don't like the way they dim.
So yeah. And you can put, so the one without a neutral wire is the PD5WS.
Ah.
There is a one that is a 6W, and it's 5 amps versus 6 amps is what it's controlling. But if you don't need the neutral wire, you can use the 6 amp. Or if you have a neutral wire, you can use the 6 amp. And I put mine on ceiling fans, so that was nice. And then the other thing I was going to tell
is that works with HomeKit. It works with Echo. It works with everything. They have it's the smartest of the smart switches, right?
Yes, but you do have to have a bridge.
They have their own bridge. You have to use their proprietary bridge, yeah.
So, okay. And then I have an update on the Snooze, S-N-O-O-Z, which was the crazy expensive fan white noise machine. I did not pay a full $80. I paid $60 for mine.
This is a Kickstarter.
It was.
Yeah.
I love it. My whole family fights over it. And apparently I snore. Gentle lady likes snoring at night that may not be so gentle.
Here's a guy who clearly snores not ladylike.
There you go.
In the Snooze video.
My husband turns it on. Like sometimes if I forget that it's on, my husband will like come over and to my side of the bed and turn it on. He says it helps reduce my snoring / he doesn't hear it. So, there you go.
Peaceful white noise from a real fan. But see, then you have a fan going. I don't know if I want a fan going.
It's nice.
Or you might as well just keep your laptop going, yeah.
Oh, well, you could do that.
But does a fan, does it blow air or is the fan the noise generator?
It's the noise generator.
Okay.
So it doesn't blow air.
Oh, see, I don't want a fan on my face. Okay.
And you can schedule it. So the Bluetooth stuff is not like my favorite. I don't really spend a lot of time on the app personally, but my daughter likes when she steals it, she likes it to go off like at midnight or something. So we can schedule it to go off at midnight.
So what does it sound like?
Oh, I played it for you guys. Do you want me to run and get it?
No, that's okay. Is that a whoosh sound?
It sounds like a white noise generator.
Yeah, let's see if he, oh yeah. You can hear it. It's like... It's too bad they have the cheesy Casio music on top of it.
Exactly.
It's also great for kids. Studies have shown that babies...
Oh, shut up. There it is.
There it is.
And I think we've all been in that position. You can customize the tone from light fans...
Mine does not look like that.
Which is like packing...
This is the original Kickstarter. That actually looked like it was made out of clay.
Yeah.
So it was probably the clay prototype. And they had some guy in the background going, all right.
Yeah.
So the cassetta, yes. No, yes.
Well, cassetta, yes.
Decora, no. Snooze, yes. Decora, no.
Snooze, yes.
Got it. Jeffrey, a number.
So two Silicon Valley billionaires, that is to say, where to go? Here we go. That is to say, Reid Hoffman and Mark Pincus have started a project to reinvent the Democratic Party called WTF, which of course stands for Win the Future.
Oh, good Lord. I think Mark thought up the name.
It's a modern people's lobby that empowers us all to choose our leaders and set our agenda, said Pincus.
Oh, just what we need, another lobby.
Yeah. So people will vote on the policies and discuss them on Twitter. Oh, I can see nothing that will go wrong with that.
See, I think Reid Hoffman's very smart. We talked about his decency pledge last week. Mark Pincus, the founder of Zynga, not so sure about him, but I don't do. Okay, well, you know, I think it's pretty clear that we need to find new ideas somewhere. I just feel like Silicon Valley may not be the place to look.
Yeah. Especially right now.
Oh.
By the way, Leo, did you order the Centio, that thing that had turns your Amazon phone into kind of a laptop?
No.
Oh, did you get yours, Jeff?
Oh, no. It's now. Oh. I tried to cancel it because that's what I always do. I have second thoughts. And then I couldn't. And then they properly were very transparent about learning some things in the beta and making some changes. But now means the delay is delayed until like November.
So I have the thing that Samsung shipped with their S8, the DeX, which does some of the same thing.
And Samsung's more stationary.
The DeX is a little disc, and you plug it into any available mouse, monitor, and keyboard. So it's unlike this. That's pretty small, but where you're going, you have to have a mouse, monitor, and keyboard.
Which is an issue. I don't normally just have a spare mouse, monitor, and keyboard anywhere. So this kind of makes sense, but I don't know. So you can now get a cancel if it's too late. What do you think? Should I hold on to it?
$29. I've never been overwhelmed by this. One of the reasons the Samsung makes sense is because they modified their version of Android to accommodate the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how Android's going to look on just a generic phone when it's hooked up to this. I mean,
there's an app you run.
Oh, there's an app. Okay,
there's an app. Yeah.
I mean, I think, I have a number of these devices. And I think the principle makes sense. Execution, maybe not. You'd like something, but you travel so much. I can understand why you'd want something like that.
I can't decide. I never can.
How much is $129 to you, Jeff? I mean, really, that's what
actually,
you
should ask. I ordered the Deluxe, which has the backlighting and the backlit keyboard. And so it's $190, I think.
Ooh. Oh, no. Kill
this,
it.
This was a winner on Kickstarter at the time, the biggest hardware startup of all time. $2.9 million they raised on this.
Yeah. So what's the delay, you see? Mm. You know, so it's a good, it's, you know, they're being very transparent and saying we started with this thing and we learned some stuff. So the main challenge is the team faces a significant number of phones using non-standard communications protocols due to Android's fragmentation.
Run away.
And so they changed the firmware and stuff. So now it's going to ship late October to late November.
Run away.
I ordered the...
I have ordered I got emailed today that my Eco Rico is coming later in the month. Do you know about the Eco Rico electric scooter?
No.
This is another way for me to break my neck. Actually, I got it for Michael because he his bus stop is like a mile from his school, or actually 2 miles. So we got him the Eco Rico, the new Model R, can go up to 20 miles an hour.
Wow.
It has a 10 to 40 mile range, lithium ion. It's got a headlight, a tail light, an underlight, turn signals, air tires, front shocks, It's a little heavy. It's 27 pounds, but it's light enough that he could, and it folds up, that he could carry it as he gets off the bus, carry it under the bus, and then unfold it and whiz off to school.
9 out of 10 Americans commute to
We've
work.
Seen it because this is a going concern, which is nice. This company, EcoRico, makes other model scooters. We haven't seen the R yet, but they make other scooters. I don't know. I think this seems like a cool idea.
So I'm waiting on my, it's called Mighty. It is a Spotify player. And I wanted it when it first launched and I waited because I was like, oh, this does not look like it's going to go anywhere. But then I bought it like at the end of June or no, the beginning of June because they had gotten finally all the Spotify approvals and they said it was shipping at the end of the month. But so I bought it. And now it was supposed to ship by June 30th, but so far I got nothing and no communication from them.
It's
so
a like, new feature of the show, Kickstarter Nightmares.
I thought I was being smart.
No, it's never smart to buy something on Kickstarter. Never, ever. Run away.
Exactly.
So, which is exactly why I just bought Samsara, the world's first aluminum smart suitcase.
Oh, you know, AT&T is putting stuff in Toomey now. Did you see that?
Oh, I mean, those are like
crazy
Toomey.
Overpriced.
Yeah,
oh,
they're expensive.
They're fancy.
I never own a Toomey. It's one of my life bucket list goals.
It used to be a lot
less with your Eames
expensive.
Chair?
Yeah, my Eames chair, my Toomey. So let me see. Yeah, of the things I've ordered on, there's quite a few things I've ordered on Kickstarter that I never got.
Really?
Yeah. Going back to 2011 when I ordered a pair of $100 dice that I still haven't gotten six years later.
What kind of dice are these?
They ain't your grandpappy's dice.
They're quantum dice.
Quantum dice. I'm still waiting for my Jibo. That was on Indiegogo. That was the robot that talks to you.
Oh, yeah. They had some management shakeups.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, Cynthia
was taken. Yeah.
Cynthia Bashir's left?
She's still there, but she was taken back from, she's taken down as CEO. So I think there was some.
Here's the Unity stand for IMAX and Apple displays. Never got that either. They canceled. So if you buy stuff on Kickstarter, let the buyer beware, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you got your money's back, right?
Not in a lot of cases, no.
Oh. If you follow up, you might.
No, they don't guarantee that. I did get my floating bonsai tree. I told you that. Never going to use
floating
it.
Bonsai.
You want mine?
Well, let me see. Is it an actual bonsai tree?
No, you don't get the tree.
Oh.
You just get a piece of lava rock with a magnet in it. And a base, and then it floats on the magnet.
I've found something I must buy. I must buy it.
What's that?
A floating bonsai tree?
It's right now, it's a Projects We Love on Technology, interactive LED eyelashes. Don't you think that look good on me?
I actually want those. Don't make fun of me.
There's a market for every product.
Only reason I didn't buy
them
is
every minute.
They're wired. They work.
What? You have to have a wire coming out of your head?
Well, so the lashes, if they're the ones I'm thinking of, and I don't know how many flashing LED lights, eyelashes there are out there.
It's got to be the ones.
Yeah, those are it. So you stick the LEDs just like you're applying false eyelashes on your eyes. And then there's a little wire.
I know how to do so well, yes.
Okay. It's not hard. You just glue.
I like the name F-dot lashes.
Yeah, the video's amazing.
Flashes.
Yes.
Order those. Those are creepy as hell.
I think they'd be amazing.
Oh, that's creepy. It's too bad they're wired.
They're tiny wires, but you can see the wire on the side of
the
space.
Oh, yeah, but
there?
You wear them to your rave or, you know, your next acid trip.
No one's going to see the wire, yeah.
Oh, my
Dance party.
God.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh, I want to look just like him.
See, I already have blue in my hair. Look at that.
That's so weird.
If sprockets were alive today.
Oh, I need these. How much were they?
They're like $40 for the pair.
What if I just bought one? Oh, look, there's a little controller that you put in your pocket.
It goes in the back of your head. Again, I have actually researched this. And
fortunately, you just put it under your wig and it's fine. This is clearly a drag queen product.
Okay.
And, or Stacey.
Not clearly a drag queen product. This is for people. Okay, I'm wearing my wig on the show next week.
Oh, will you please? You have that wig?
Of course. I have multiple wigs.
See, I feel like there's so much about Stacey we don't really know.
That we Stacey, when you
wear these when you take your LSD on the show, please.
There we go.
Man, oh man.
I love the concept of this sort of thing. Like I would be, you know, like in the Hunger Games, how they have the capital city people. I would be one of those people who is like dyeing my skin, crazy stuff. And like, I mean, I dye my hair, but anyway.
Okay. I'll make you a deal. If you order them, I'll order them.
Oh, but I don't want the wire. Like I'm waiting for the battery powered. Cause that like, I don't want to wear them to the rave. I want to wear them out to like a night.
I like
out.
The night. There's a Knight Rider one. Now what I want is a little speaker. I could play that Spotify speaker and have the Knight Rider theme going while my eyes are going back and forth.
There you go.
And I'd say, just call me Kit. All right. We're going to wrap this up. I think we've done more.
Would you buy wet sleeve?
Huh?
What are you wear? There was wet sleeve.
No. Stop. I just bought the lashes. Please. I've had
you
enough.
Did, you really did.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I want to.
There's a plastic, liquid plastic welder.
No, stop it.
A welding tool.
You know I'm going to order it. Stop it.
Sonnet.
Stop
world's
it.
World's most advanced off-grid mobile mesh.
Stop network. It.
This makes for a great gift right here.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC with Stacey Higginbotham of Stacey on IoT, iotpodcast.com for the podcast, at GigaStacey on Twitter. Thank you, Stacey.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Oh, somebody's at your door.
I was about to say, yes. If my show was right here, I could see.
Time for the pizza. We also have a fabulous time with Jeff Jarvis every week. He is at CUNY, and there are some very lucky journalism students who get to work with him. When does school start?
August. I get to brainwash then.
How fun. We will also see him at buzzmachine.com, his blog. He writes on Medium frequently, sometimes on politico.eu. I liked the response from Axel Springer. Your post on the politico.eu. The fight is on.
You never much liked that, Jarvis.
Yeah. Didn't like him and don't like him now.
No.
We do this show I already did that part. You can get a copy of it at twit.tv/twig. You can also get it if you subscribe in your favorite podcast appliance. Please do. We want you to be here for each and every episode. Thanks for joining us. And I will see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.